It's time for Mac Break Weekly. Andy and Alex and Renee, they're all here. And guess what? So are the new iMacs. We'll talk about those, the new Magic Trackpad keyboard mouse thing, and a whole lot more, including a review of the Steve Jobs movie. It's all coming up next on Mac Break Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Mac Break Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 476, recorded Tuesday, October 13th, 2015. According to the movie, Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by IT Pro TV. A good IT pro is always learning, and IT Pro TV is the resource to keep your IT skills up to date with engaging and informative video tutorials. For a free 7-day trial and 30% off the lifetime of your account, go to itpro.tv/MacBreak and use the offer code MacBreak30. And by Braintree. Are you looking to set up payments for your business? Braintree gives your app or website a payment solution that accepts just about every payment method with one easy integration. Plus, Braintree will give you the first $50,000 in transactions fee-free. To learn more, visit BraintreePayments.com/MacBreak. And by Corning Optical Cables. Corning's incredibly durable Thunderbolt and USB 3.0 optical cables are longer, thinner, lighter, and stronger. Go to Corning.com/twit and use the promo code TWIT to save up to $50 on USB 3.0 optical cables. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show where we talk about the latest Macintosh and Apple news with all the gang assembled. Andy Iannocco from the Chicago Sun-Times. It's good to see
Hello,
you again.
Leo. It's nice to be one of the gang.
One of the gang. Also, Renee Ritchie from iMore.com. Good to see you from Montreal.
See you. Actual Mac news today, Leo. Exciting.
Woo!
It's crazy.
And what? That's Alex Lindsay also here.
In the flesh.
In the flesh, as they say. Nice to have all of you. This is the official gang. Although it'd be fun if we could bring back Merlin Mann and Scott Bourne.
I know. That would be a good
Scott time. Said he'd be on any time, so okay. I just got to get Merlin. It'd be fun. Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be great.
This is one of the longest running shows on Twit, and so it's gone through some iterations. You started as a video-only show.
Right.
Then we started doing video and audio. Then we stopped doing the video. Then we started doing the video again.
Exactly. and it's gone through. We've had a lot of good hosts.
Yeah. Move through. Yeah. Yeah.
Before we settled.
So... yeah, we don't often have Mac news. So there's a new iMac, two new iMacs.
New iMac, updated iMac, and new Magic stuff.
And then new mouse and trackpad. So where should we start? First of all, let's start with the 21-inch. This is a 4K. Starts at $1,499. It's so cute. It's
slightly
little.
Bigger than 4K, which I was really excited about, because a 4K, it would fill the screen. This is just slightly bigger, so I'm hoping you can get some palettes on the side of it, too.
Okay. Oh, you mean like while you're editing 4K video?
Yeah, because this resolution is bigger. It's not just two times the last iMac, which was 1080p. It's 2.5 times, so you have a little bit of extra space horizontally and vertically.
And then this apparently has a broader color gamut, 25% broader color gamut. App has always done very nice monitors.
Maybe Alex understands this better, but it's DCI-P3 instead of sRGB, yeah. Which is apparently the digital movie theater standard.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, because we work with sRGB all the time in Lightroom.
That's the typical, you know, there's a lot of different ways to do it. And I think that, you know, it does look a little bit better. I think that most people will not be able to.
Yeah.
Apple said that it was along the lines of the professional videographers would have, quote, appreciated, unquote. And normal people would say, oh, that does look a little better.
But it's really for video. It's a video color.
Well, it's interesting
space,
technology,
right?
Because the original panel, most of the LED backlights they use are blue biased, and what they've done is increased the red green phosphors now to sort of balance that out, so you get much more red and green spectrum.
Hmm. The tagline iMac Retina now in colossal and ginormous. I don't know if a 21-inch display is to be considered colossal, but
4K, it's
compared to a watch,
dense.
I have to say. You don't see Apple talking a lot about the Mac Pro anymore. That 5K iMac is really the Mac of choice.
Yeah, and I have to say that if I'd be hard pressed to get them. You really have to have a specific need to get the Mac Pro. I think that the iMacs do a pretty darn good job.
When you're looking for extra connectivity and
external stuff to run, right. You know, there are reasons that we have a couple other Mac Pros, but
this has Thunderbolt out, so you can daisy chain it, right?
And you have more Thunderbolt outs. You have more, right. You know, like when we have run out of, connections on our Mac Pro.
One of the few people in the world who would run out of connections.
Yep. It's possible.
Even on an iMac, because with two Thunderbolt ports, right. You daisy chain and
well, you can. It's just that then that becomes cumbersome and you're always afraid something's going to get disconnected.
Right. So it is now the original. I love this. The original iMac. okay. Which the Bondi Blue iMac, which came out, let's, you know, say, quite a long time ago. 17 years
1997,
ago.
1997, I think. 98.
Yeah, 98. Yeah, I know that because Tech TV had just started, and we had a lot of fun with the Bondi Blue. We found a bunch of very similar appliances, vacuum cleaners.
It might have been a little later than that. Was it 1988, 98, or 99?
98. It says it right here in 98.
Okay, there we go.
If you'd seen the Steve Jobs movie, you would know. No, we'll talk about that later. Has anybody seen it besides me?
No.
All right. I got an invitation at 1 p.m. by the movie company to see it at 7 p.m. on a day when the MBTA was on a Sunday schedule. So
you saved yourself some hair tearing.
I wanted to see it.
And gnashing of teeth. Okay. We have an interview. I did an interview with Danny Boyle on Sunday, which we'll show on the new screensavers this Saturday, the director. We'll talk about it later. I want to do the happy stuff first. So here's, this is fun. They made a page comparing the original 1998 iMac, which for some reason, is this my computer that is off center like that? I think the text is centered, but for some reason they're nudging the iMac.
It's
off.
On its way out.
Maybe.
The new one is thinner, Leo.
It's to show how fat it is. It can't even fit.
Yeah.
That bothers me for some reason.
I think it's
your designer, Renee. Does that bother you the way that this is?
A little bit, but it's a common trick to make something look bigger than it is. Like when you want to make a phone look really big, you cut the top and bottom of the casing off, and then it looks like it's too big to fit the frame.
So somebody would just go, "Oh wow, that's fat."
Yeah.
14 million more pixels. 14 million more pixels. 62,000 times faster graphics.
There's that.
That's a statistic. 366 times more processing power.
Times, not percent.
Times. And I think that you probably would notice that difference.
Yeah, just a little bit.
But remember, you're running 1998 vintage software, so it's not, you know. 1,000 times more RAM. We've come a long way, baby. 750 times more storage. That's the lowest multiple.
I'm continuing to scroll down. I don't see the part where they're talking about how much more you can upgrade it later on. Ooh, and how serviceable this is. And
No handle.
By the way, the Jobs movie, handle and serviceability both come up. So I'll talk about that. Yeah.
Also, much less Bondi Blue. And it used to be
much less. I think it's aesthetically a lot
100%
nicer.
Less Bondi
100%
blue.
Less Bondi. And no plastic.
No.
Or very little, maybe. There's a little bit on the plug socket.
Remember the days when Apple would put color on some of their devices?
Yeah.
Rose gold iMac, Andy.
Those were the days. Those were the days. So
I'm just saying that these props, the modern Macs would not be out of place in that conference room where the 1984 video is being made.
Ooh.
Just everybody with a dull gray metal screen. Looking
now you've done
him.
It. Now we're getting rose gold next year, and it's going to be your fault.
Oh, I would buy. Wait a minute, I would buy a rose gold iMac.
Call it pink.
I swear to God, I would.
You just need a rose for your rose.
Completely
gold
come
Apple
around
car.
On pink. I have to say,
I've got the watch. Now,
even in
too.
The NFL, everybody's wearing pink this month. I think pink is okay. Do you have a pink watch? Did you get the rose gold?
Rose gold watch? Yeah.
You have a problem, Renee. I'm serious.
This is a review unit, so it's not my problem yet, but it might be eventually.
Yeah, it might be. for the 4K camera in your pocket, remember we were talking about this. Here you have a 4K video shooter.
I do not understand how you have a 4K iMac and a 4K camera and not a 4K Apple TV. Yeah. Does not compute.
Well, especially since putting 4K in a set-top box isn't that hard, as Amazon has shown. Mm-hmm. As the
Roku
is shown on my NVIDIA Shield, my Android TV is shown, because this to the chipsets generally support it.
Although does
it's not a hard thing to do.
Does the Amazon box do better as far as the quality than the Amazon service on the TV? Because I got to tell you, like I got a new TV. And the
that's
Amazon
the
Prime,
crap TV software.
Oh, my gosh.
That's the crap TV. So here's
it
one of the problems.
So bad.
Amazon, and I think this is true of Netflix as well, I guess the vendor makes the software.
Oh, my gosh.
Because Amazon has different software on every platform, and TVs, which who made your TV?
Vizio.
You know, the
it was
the
a good deal.
I have a Panasonic. You're right. It's the worst software.
Well, it's just that the software is.
But that's why it's slow and bad.
Well, no, I'm talking about just the video quality. My kids understand it completely. Like I don't, you know, I just go back to my Apple TV. But my kids understand the difference between what shows are on Netflix versus Amazon Prime and where to get everything, and they've got it all sorted out. But my complaint is mostly that all the video quality is just so bad on Amazon that I don't find it watchable.
Yeah, that's the software.
Okay.
Trust me.
Wow.
I know.
That's horrible.
It's horrible.
Like,
you got to get a Roku. That's why you get a Roku.
Right, right.
So people are saying there's no 4K content. Well, that's changing almost so rapidly.
There really is a chicken or egg kind of thing there. You know,
and TVs, it'd be hard not to buy a new TV that's not 4K. Is your new TV 4K?
There's no H.265 hardware acceleration yet, which is the next thing that they need. Because they do H.264 in hardware. They do H.265 in software still. Like, they're using it for FaceTime. But it's still, that gets into the chipset.
This is that AGVC format.
Well, and the problem with AGVC is the licensing. So the reason that AGVC is an issue is because MPEG Group has they're going to charge money, like good money for it. They didn't charge it for H.264, or they didn't charge very much. They've made it clear that they're going to actually make some money on a lot of money, like millions and possibly billions of dollars on AGVC. So you have some groups like Google and Facebook that are kind of looking for open source, you know, type solutions. But that's the problem is the licensing is going to be not just expensive for the manufacturers, which it was before, but it's going to be expensive for the content creators. And so
AGVC. You mean me?
Yeah. No, not in the content. Yeah, you. If you started using AGVC, you know, okay. So that's the challenge.
Hope you enjoy this 720p video.
Well, you can do H.264. You can do H.264 in 4K. It's just twice.
But there's no hardware support for it. Yeah.
Well, but it's just twice the size.
It's just big.
It's big.
You know, it just means that you need a really good connection at home. But you can definitely watch H.264.
Do you think that Apple would add 4K to the Apple TV if only to make sure that its own interface looks really, really good and its own apps look really, really good?
One would think.
And it's also going to be used to stream photos and stuff like that.
Yeah, one would think.
You would think so.
I think it's on the cusp, and that's probably, and Apple probably fell on the wrong side of the cusp.
Or The thing is the processor in the Apple TV is capable of 4K. So the question really is, are they going to do one more thing after they've released it, or are they going to do it in the spring?
I was told you can't do a
understanding, they can't software upgrade it.
There's
and
no
it
software
was a huge discussion point, and they ended up doing it this way.
And here's why I think you
they
can.
Cannot. They cannot.
They cannot.
No, it's not software upgradable to.
And I bet you it's not the processor. It's, believe it or not, the HDMI port.
No, because they, well,
it's, they don't support HDMI 2. It's 1.4A. Right.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Because the HDMI cables, the new HDMI cables that Apple sells at the Apple store are 4K.
Oh, huh, that's interesting.
They actually say them on the package. I just
Oh, but it's 4K 30 frames or 4K 60?
You know, it's 4K.
It's kind of a mess, you know.
4K 30 is fine.
4K 30 is not fine. And by the way, you bought your TV at the wrong time because HDR is imminent.
Oh, I'm fine with that.
And then, so HD, I know about this because Scott Wilkinson tells me.
OLED HDR.
OLED, you want OLED HDR 4K. The Blu-ray players for 4K are coming out this like in the next month or two. So content is going to start. And because movies are shot in higher resolution in most cases, 4K is a standard in Hollywood.
Yep.
It's going to be a matter of them. It'll be like early days of Blu-ray where you have five movies.
Right.
But that will be by this time next year, there'll be a slew of movies. Voodoo's streaming 4K. Netflix is now streaming 4K. Who knows how good that is? But Vudu's streaming 4K. Netflix is streaming 4K. Amazon is streaming 4K. So I think 4K content's not the issue. 4K TVs are widely available now. In fact, if you bought, as you did, a new TV, it would be hard-pressed not to get a 4K TV.
Right, and I wasn't ready to spend more money. I mean, I already spent enough money on it. It's a big – I wanted size and 4K, and so it's – 70 inches 4K. Yeah. And so I decided I didn't want to spend the extra money on HDR. I've seen HDR sets, which I think look great, but they weren't enough for me to.
Well, the good news is you have 4K on your iMac.
Yes.
And that's all we're talking about for the moment.
And you can shoot your own content. Just go out and shoot your own music videos, your own movies. Just shoot everything yourself. Like the heck with Hollywood. You now have an iPhone. Just go out and shoot all your content.
How does he make Star Wars in his basement? The rest of us can't.
How well does your TV upscale 1080p content?
It does pretty well.
Yeah,
it looks pretty good upscaled. But I have to say that when you put actual 4K onto it, it's like eye-poppingly stunning.
Yeah, that's what I
you know, like it's just like you're like wow. You know, and I didn't even like the first stuff I tested was not even Hollywood stuff. I took my GoPro out.
Wow.
You know, and shot 4K and then I played it back on the TV and
have you used the iPhone yet?
Stunning. No. I haven't put anything for my iPhone on it yet, but it was stunning.
Everybody wants to know, what model did you get? Because now you know. By the way, I should understand that you will sell now 1,000 TVs, whatever you say. So choose wisely.
So I did. So really, I was looking for a breakdown of where cost became what I consider prohibitive.
A good choice, actually.
Vizio, I think. I mean, I looked at, I've had a lot of different Panasonic, Samsung, Vizio, and bang for buck. You know, the Vizio, I felt like I was getting
easy.
It's a 70-inch 4K. I think it's what they call the M series or whatever.
The M series, yeah.
And so it's not the top of the line.
No, they have a performance series, or rather, they have a video file series now. Reference, I think they call it, but you wouldn't want that one.
No. Here's the thing: is that there's part of me that would want that one, but not the part that has the wallet. This is the game room thing with my kids. And I put a very hard limit of $2,000 for a TV. I had the 50-inch Vizio, which I was very happy with. That was like $750. It got pushed into work here. We need another 50-inch 4K. So off it went. And so that I felt very crushed that I had to go out and get another.
I think Vizio is really killing it.
I think
right
that if you're okay with a 50-inch, for $800 or $850, the Vizio 50-inch was amazing.
Yeah.
I think that the but anyway, so the 70-inch is what my son says is the best TV ever. So as far as he's concerned.
It should
so
be. It's big, and Vizio quality is excellent.
And my big thing was I spent a little extra money, but I also calculated that I...
$2,000 is not a horrible price.
It's not a horrible price for a TV, and...
This used to be so expensive.
No more theater. No more...
Think of all the money you'll save.
It's, for me to take my kids and my wife out to a movie costs... $75 to $100. So,
You should have bought the reference because this is only $130,000. I think
it's only $130,000.
No, I can't remember what it is. It's expensive.
It's expensive.
They have a 65 and a 100.
And I do have the sound bar.
100.
That
did
I already had.
You got the sound.
Yeah, it definitely makes a big difference. The Vizio sound bar, because it just links right in and you can change. The nice thing about the Vizio is it does let you, some of them do it, but not all of them. But one thing that's very important is it lets you change the audio sync.
But that's for the 120 inch.
Right.
It's only 6,000 for the 65.
On a 4K? Make sure
it's
that
UHD.
I can do plus or minus.
We're talking at odds here.
I can do.
He's talking about one thing, I'm talking about another. But they strangely mesh.
The thing that doesn't. Like the
this
HDR
has reference audio built into it, which I think is really intriguing. They have 5.1 in the TV.
It's just the room that I have it in is not nice enough.
Comes with a wireless subwoofer.
You need at least Dolby Atmos now, Leo. You can't go less than
I think this has Atmos.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. I don't want Atmos. That's what it comes from
above
you.
Bouncing off the ceilings.
Yeah, I don't.
Unless your walls are like padded like Disney Hall, you know.
Andy, this is not about reality.
$130,000 for a television set,
but it's 120 inches.
You know, you can't Apple Watch editions.
You can't actually get this in the door of most homes. You have to take the lid off. You have to take the roof off to get it in.
Well, you're a basketball player. Leo,
120 inches would be awesome,
wouldn't it?
You're having a house built around it. Definitely, it's like the HVAC,
and it would be worth it.
Lisa said if we get the new studio, I can buy the 120-inch for the studio.
But what you do is you build a theater around, a small like home theater around that.
That's what this is for. Like, this is really for Shaq. You nailed it. Yes. This is Shaq's TV.
Yes.
This is not yours and my TV.
But the 5K iMac is more affordable than ever, Leo.
Yes, it is. And we'll get back to the Mac. I don't expect that the reason that Vizio doesn't expect to sell a lot of these. This is Vizio saying we are no longer a second tier manufacturer.
It's their Lamborghini.
It's their Lamborghini. Back to the iMac. Where were we?
The thing I found was interesting is that the new 5K iMac has skipped all the way to Skylake chips, but because there's no Skylake chips with integrated graphics yet, you're on Broadwell now for the 4K one.
Oh, so yeah, I guess you know the 21 inch is essentially the budget model. How much? But it's not that budget.
Yeah, it uses Iris graphics, and Intel just updated the Broadwell with the Iris graphics, and that's what Apple's using. It's the one from this summer, but there's no Skylake yet with those.
So they're doing
but the Skylake with discrete graphics are available, so those are in the 5K.
And so those are the AMD, and they're using AMD?
No. What? AMD graphics, ATI graphics. That's interesting.
They're using Intel Integrated Iris Pro for the 21.
By the way, if
you're doing spherical production, just note that that won't work. So you need NVIDIA.
It seems to me NVIDIA won, and that anybody who's still using AMD chips is like also ran.
Apple seems to kind of like go back and forth between the two. I don't know why, but it's the ATI or AMD approach to graphics processors is convoluted, in my opinion.
Yeah. No, I think you're not. I mean, every gamer, every gaming machine, it's all NVIDIA now.
Anyway, the way they chunk the data makes a lot more sense. I mean, the AMD actually, I think, the ATI is a little bit faster because of the way they break it down, but it's much harder to, well, at least for when we were developing for it, it was much harder to develop for because of the way it breaks everything up.
So I think they just write for metal now.
The high-end iMac 5K, which, of course, I just recently bought a 5K iMac. So.
Right, we knew that was going to come out.
Me too.
I don't think Skylake is significantly improved over Broadwell, is it, Renee?
No, so it's the same process. They're both at the 14-nanometer process. What Skylake is the talk updates. What that does is bring the new microarchitecture, which allows for higher performance at better power efficiency. And, you know, environmentalism is good, but it's sitting on your desk, so you have as much power as you need. So I don't think it's a huge deal at this point.
And and the benchmarks I've seen, it doesn't seem that much faster.
No, and Intel's doing a double talk this year, so they're going to have Kaby Lake out fairly soon anyways, which is also 14 nanometers. So now it's sort of like this big blurry period.
It's not that you should feel bad about having Broadwell, but you might want to feel bad about not having discrete graphics. But I think the new Iris graphics are on Broadwell were considerably faster.
Yep. And for most people, it's going to be fine. Unless you're really, you know, these are hardcore gamers, professional users, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, but a 5K screen, that makes so much of a difference.
I'm looking at the old one, Leo, with its low sRGB color gamut now.
Oh,
I'm trying
man.
Hard not to just
practically. How do you live?
It's practically black and white.
Oh, my God. I want my 25% more colors.
Seriously. And it's trying hard not to look at me because it knows.
You know what? I was very pleased because this was the first generation, the one you and I bought, 5K iMac. And, you know, first generation of a lot of these things might be a little sluggish, like the early iPads and so forth. But I have not noticed sluggishness in the least. This thing, smoking.
And I got the lowest end version, and I've never had a single hiccup on it. Yeah. It's ridiculously fast.
Any slowdowns seem to be OS-based more than than the hardware-based. So, good. Well, this is a nice slipstream upgrade. I'm still thinking that we should see a slipstream upgrade for the MacBooks pretty soon. Kind of surprised we don't see Skylake MacBooks. Maybe they want to separate these announcements out. It would seem to me it would be worth, if you're thinking about buying a MacBook, waiting a minute or two.
If you can.
Yeah.
You really always wait until you just can't do it anymore.
Yeah, wait until the end of October because you can't release new stuff after that for the holiday buying season.
So we're talking a couple of weeks. I think probably they're done, they're ready, and it's just a question of they don't want to step on the announcements, so they're going to do them a week apart or something like that. That would be my guess. So let's talk about the new Magic. The Magic is back, baby. The all-new Apple Magic Keyboard, Magic Mouse 2, Magic Trackpad 2. First thing I do, frankly, when I get a new Mac is trash all three. So
Trackpad has Force Touch now, Leo.
Oh, yeah? Well, that might be interesting. Yeah. All right. Yeah.
And it doesn't have AA batteries that slowly break down.
It's rechargeable.
And Apple listened to my prayers. So I've always been complaining. My desktop keyboard is way too thick. and the edges are way too. I can't stand the fact that when I like need to put to move it to another part of my desk, that I'm not accidentally pushing keys because there's no bezel.
It's the new bezel-less
power key on my MacBook all the time, Andy. Oh, when I pick it up.
The trackpad of the three, I use a wired Apple keyboard, which I'm very happy with. It has a numeric keypad on it. I like wired because the battery always dies at an inopportune moment.
You can wire this. The port for the Lightning is right on the back for both the trackpad and the keyboard. You can plug the Lightning cable in as you're using them.
And just keep it plugged in.
Yeah.
And it has a super cool feature where they're Bluetooth still, but if you plug them in, it'll just say, oh, okay, well, I'm gonna automatically pair to this device. You don't have to do anything else. We're typing in a 4-digit number, anything like that.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah. That was always a little bit of a pain. And I always worried about, at boot time, if I wanted to do a restore or something, how does it even know I have a keyboard yet, right?
Yep. That's actually pretty quick. But that's also the reason why I always have a wired whatever it is standing by.
Yeah.
After the first time I got caught for whatever reason, like my wired mouse, like for whatever reason, couldn't connect. And now a Skype call is coming in. You need to have wired stuff handy. So I'm glad that Apple provided that option. They also got rid of the plastic. They got rid of the because there's no need for AA batteries. It's no longer got that little piano roll thing in the back. I'm surprised. I was hoping that if Apple released a new version of their keyboard, they'd make one that works supremely well with the iPad Pro, because I think a lot of people are going to look at that fabric covered keyboard and say, this is great for if you don't want to invest a few extra ounces and a few extra millimeters for more comfort. But I really do want to use this as a laptop sometimes. So you notice that there aren't any silkscreen buttons for home or the other stuff that's typically on an iPad keyboard. Makes me wonder if they're even thinking about creating a version of this that's paired for the iPad Pro. Mm. The other weird thing is that they carry over the same thing that they added to the new MacBook in 2015 that people were complaining about, where the direction keys up and down are now split to just this to share one keycap height, and that's not great, again, for a desktop keyboard where you ostensibly would have plenty of room to make this more comfortable, because, you know, up and down, you page up, you page down, you use that all the time. So I think Apple doesn't make any mistakes. This is exactly the keyboard they wanted to make. I think that they're very, very well aware that if people want something more like the extended keyboard or something that has thicker key feel or better function keys, there's Logitech and there's other companies that are going to make them. I wish that they would make that kind of keyboard with Apple design, but again, that's just not their priority right now.
Why so small? I mean, why? What is the market demand for a bezel-less keyboard? Is it for throwing in your backpack?
They are really saying that this is it takes up less space on the desk. I think that it's just because, just as I said, I think this is just the keyboard that they wanted to make. They wanted to make something that's pretty, that echoes the minimalist lines of the iMac. Remember that the iMac is a desktop computer, 27 inches, where they made all kinds of compromises so that the outer edge would be just a few millimeters thick, even if this means that you have to get up off your chair and walk around to the back to put in an SD card or anything like that. Right. I'm not saying that this is style over substance. I'm saying that they really do think that the pleasure that Apple can deliver, that no other company can deliver, is to create this consistent looking piece of art that integrates with the iMac very, very well, knowing that other people are perfectly willing to buy a black Microsoft keyboard that's a plastic body that has a USB cable attached to it that might actually be a lot more comfortable to type with, that might actually be a lot more convenient to use. But again, since there are people who've got that covered, there are not people who are making keyboards that look as cool as that.
Lithium-ion battery supposedly lasts a month or more between charges. It has a Lightning cable, but it comes with a Lightning to USB. I'm confused.
Lightning,
what?
It's Lightning on the keyboard, and then you plug that into the keyboard, and then the USB goes in your iMac to charge it.
Yeah. Why?
Small?
Same as the Apple TV remote.
Reversible.
If you're in the Apple ecosystem, you already have Lightning cables around. You might not have micro USB. Also, they threw in the same sort of little nicety that they put into other devices, where the Apple Pencil, where it takes a little while to get a full month long charge, but if you're desperate to get going, it will 30 seconds will give you something like a half an hour or an hour.
Yeah, and 2 minutes gives you about 9 hours of daily, of, like, or about a day of use.
Wait a minute. Now, is this an innie or an outie?
It's an innie.
These are these you plug into.
So you use the same. You're using the same connector that you have for your iPhone or iPad or whatever in the keyboard.
Got it.
Now, the only slight bit of controversy here is that both the keyboard and the trackpad, because they have big black planes, have the port right on the back, so you can use them while you're charging. The mouse has the port on the bottom, so you can't charge it while you're using it. But Apple does say, again, 2 minutes gives you 9 hours, so you can keep work, or a typical 9-hour work day, so you can charge it for 2 minutes while you're doing, according to Craig Hockenberry, your stand-up routine for your watch.
I usually don't use
it. At the end of the night, finish charging it.
I just don't use mice because I usually have enough desk space.
I'd
rather just have a trackpad because that's the space it needs.
I like magic. I like mice. The Magic Mouse is not, to me, the greatest mouse ever. But you know,
I've never liked a single Apple mouse. And I agree that putting it at the bottom is not a good design choice. But I would argue getting an Apple mouse is not a good design choice.
I have so many Apple mice.
They're in a bag. I mean, we just buy Logitech mice and just
Replace it immediately with a wired mouse. But I have a bunch of them. If anybody wants one,
I'm quite serious. About 8 or 9 years ago at the MIT Fleet Market, someone must have been tearing down an old computer lab because I bought a box of like a dozen like generation 2 Microsoft mouses from 1990. And they're really comfortable. They've got a scroll wheel. They're fast. They're responsive. And every time one breaks after 3 or 4 years, I just simply throw it out, go back to that box in my closet, pull out another one. And that's pretty much the thing.
Microsoft mouse of all things is like the best mouse ever. Yeah. And I'm a lefty, one of the reasons I like it is because it's hand agnostic.
I mean, they're nice. There's another thing where I think that Apple's very well aware that their companies like Anchors makes this really great mouse that costs all of $9 and it's wireless. And they know that people who just want something that's more ergonomic and less expensive, they've got that, but they don't have something that looks good as a static device. I was disappointed that they didn't find a more comfortable using mouse. I think it's been since maybe version 1 or version 2 that Apple's had a comfortable mouse to make.
They made that stupid round one.
You know, in this G. Steve Jobs movie, one of the things they leave in, because you don't see much of the demo, but you see him rehearsing the iMac, Bondi Blue iMac demo, and he says, and it's got the most amazing mouse you've ever seen, which, as everyone knows, was the worst mouse ever.
But it's the most amazing mouse you ever saw, but never,
never used.
Yeah.
Once they had the puck, then they realized that people would buy something that looked one way and didn't actually work. And then from then on, it was downhill.
There was a rich third-party market for little plastic docks you could snap onto that circle to give it a sense of up and down in your hand.
Yeah.
That indicates that perhaps this was not a great design.
So the thing for me was I just like consistency. So switching keyboards is hard because it always takes me a few minutes to get used to the keyboard. So I'm using the MacBook a lot now. So if I have a keyboard that's like the MacBook on this iMac, it's great. And I use a trackpad on the MacBook all the time. And I've been using that. I've either been using trackpads or Wacom tablets my entire career, 20 years. So I'm just used to using them. I'm not used to using a mouse anymore. So getting that trackboard pad and that keyboard, it gives me consistency between laptop and desktop. And then it's just muscle memory. I still like a mouse.
Maybe I'm an old guy. Now, we should make it clear. No one's talking about a mouse with balls. These are optical mice.
And we have a title.
Show title.
You know what I mean. We're all talking about optical mice. No, because somebody says, I hated the mice with steel balls. No, of course not.
Really the thing I missed about the mice with balls. that didn't come out well.
We got a lot of mileage out of how to clean.
Well, then my whole thing is that when you were talking on the phone on a conference call, you could take your mouse and pop it open, pull the ball out and clean the...
You had to, but
it gave you something to do.
The rollers,
you sit there and go with the rollers, and
the rollers revealed that there was some mysterious gunky substance all over my mouse pad.
I had a little pin that comes with your shirt, and I had it sitting in my. It was sticking in my mouse pad, and I'd pull it out, and then I'd coax all the stuff out of the rollers.
Oh, those steel balls.
I love that.
Stephen Levy writing for his site at Medium. Posted this really cool look into the design labs at Apple as they're designing these devices, and the bookend for this is a story about how they have they're focusing on the runners at the bottom of the mouse, because when they had to do a redesign to make room for the rechargeable batteries, they had to move the antennas because the internal batteries were now like interfering with that, and they got that working fine, but now it made a sound as you moved it across the desk that they didn't like, and now we move over to an anechoic chamber to figure out where the south is. And, right. And the article ends with them talking about how they actually redesigned the rail so that they get the sound and the feel that they wanted to have in the original mouse. So there, I mean, it's always fascinating to, I'm glad that Apple is giving access to some people to into so what some of their thought process is, because when you look at how, I don't know anybody who's a fan of this mouse as design as an actual mouse device, and that might provoke you to think, gee, don't they think about these things? Well, they do think about these things. They're just, they have different priorities, and they obsess over the things that they think are really, really important and the things that they think that they can do really, really well that no other company can do. It's still not a mouse design I'd recommend to anybody, but at least at least it doesn't make that strange noise when you move it.
They make good phones.
So yeah, this is in Steven's back channel column, which really is anybody who gives Steven a chance to write long articles is good in my book. It's interesting because Apple is very they're still very media cagey, smart people, and this is a very smart thing to give somebody like Steven Levy the chance to write about their design team and show that they all drink smart water, except for this guy. And they all wear Apple Watches. I suppose you really don't have a choice if you work on the Apple design.
I'm guessing you get a good discount.
Johnny would really give you a stink eye if you didn't wear an Apple Watch, right? So, yeah, the very interesting article. And this is the mouse didn't sound right. There's Kate Bergeron, who made sure it did. It's kind of a... great thing. I like getting inside the Apple's design team, and that was a secretive place for a long time. Yeah. So it's nice that they're giving people access. However,
yeah, it's still not something.
It's still not something I'd buy.
It's a beautiful static object.
Yeah,
it's
$79, folks. That's a lot of money for a mouse. Now, does the top still like a trackpad on the top of that? Right? Isn't that part of the deal with a Magic Mouse?
Yeah, it's like a multi. Yeah. It doesn't have the force click stuff, but it's got all the multi-touch stuff on it.
Well, they can't have the force click stuff because the click on the mouse is pushing it.
Yeah.
Right.
There's no button on the mouse because, well, buttons are bad.
Oh, they'll figure it out, Leo. They'll figure out a way to have no buttons on the mouse.
Magic Trackpad 2 is the breathtakingly priced $129. If I have many as Magic Trackpad 1s, should I trade them all in?
If you want force click.
You know, I force click on the trackpad on my MacBook. I don't use it all that much. I find it a little baffling.
I've been using it more since I've been using it because I've got my brain sort of made that leap with the iPhone 6S.
Love
and now
it
that
on the
I think about it, it's the preview thing that I use. I just deep click on a link on my Mac now and see the preview of the map or see the preview of the data detector or the website or anything, and it saves me having to go for it and then laboriously press the back button.
Well, and I do think it's interesting when you get into that ecosystem because I got used to it on my watch and then I started playing with it on the phone, and next thing you know, it is like this kind of process that you.
I really like mice.
I never use it on the. Mouses. I almost never use it on the watch. Use it all the time on the new iPhone.
Yeah.
And when I had the 2015 MacBook for a couple of months, I was kind of using it by the end, but it really still hadn't clicked. So, good, better, best. I'd love to see. I don't know if Apple has talked about what they describe as 3D touch and what they describe as force touch, though.
I like 3D touch.
I asked a little bit about that, and this is it's an identical mechanism to the trackpad in the new MacBook. And what that has is actual physical sensors, four of them in the corners, and that measures the displacement and then does the haptic return. Where on the iPhone, they're using the LED backlight to sort of measure the very minute changes in the pressure that you're applying to the actual glass panel. So I think it's just it's a distinction based on technology. And I thought maybe they would change it because maybe this is a better trademark term, 3D touch. But they're sticking with force touch for the Mac right now.
I think these new devices really show that Apple's become a fashion company as much as a technology company. Don't you think?
No, they've always been a design company. And as I said, I mean, if this were
the function. I mean, the mouse is a perfect example of design.
We just talked about the hockey puck, Mike, Leo.
Yeah. I think I think you could say that going all the way back to the original Mac, they made a lot of sacrifices and a lot of changes based on what they thought this represented conceptually. There was a reason why, I mean, function keys would have been really useful on the first Mac. Directional keys would have been really useful on the first Mac, but they really wanted to make the statement that no, you don't need any of those things. You might want them and they might be handy, but we want you to use the mouse instead. And I think that almost every Mac up to that, you could pass that, you could point to something that was, okay, that's not the greatest way to do that, but it sure does look spiffy. That certainly happened a lot more in the past 10 years than it had in the previous ones, but I think that it's always been about design and not fashion.
And I think that definitely trying to make it, you know, elegant in the way that it's streamlined. You know, I read this article sometime over this last week, and maybe we've talked about it in the past, with that Johnny Ive was talking about what Steve Jobs asked him every day. Did you read
that?
Was Steve Jobs would ask Johnny Ive how many times he said no every day.
Yeah.
You know, he said high numbers were good, low numbers were bad.
Yeah.
You know, but he wanted to know, you know, that you should be saying no to lots of good things so that you can have great ones, you know, that kind of thing. And no to lots of great things so you have, you know, it's so they definitely, you can see that approach. I don't necessarily agree with it. I still like mechanical, big, thick mechanical keyboards. That's what I still have.
It still comes down to what is their point of view and what kind of devices they want to make. They could have said, yeah, you know, it really would look cool to have a desktop that looks like it's got this microscopic bezel, but no, we shouldn't do that because then we wouldn't have a way to put the SD card in. Or no, it'd be nice to have a MacBook that's a little bit thinner, but no, we shouldn't do that because then we can't put an Ethernet port in and this is our top of the line machine. You know, there are a bunch of catchphrases that illustrate a lot of important points, but you can take any one of those to an extreme.
Yep. There's design in the service of functionality, and then there's fashion in the service of emotionality. Fashion's about emotion, about how feel, about how it makes you feel. And by the way, fashion is a great thing to do if you're a company because you can charge exorbitant prices because it makes people feel good. But I'm very old-fashioned in terms of, I believe in technology, and I believe in design and service of that technology. It should make you feel good, but I think a bad mouse doesn't make you feel good. It makes you feel bad.
The mouse thing, I don't think the mouse thing has anything to do
it
with
it. It only makes you feel good when you look at it.
Apple's historically just not been able to make a good mouse. Like, they've historically not been able to make good web services. It's one of the things that they've just historically not been good at. But there's no Hermes trackpad or rose gold trackpad
yet. Just wait.
The thing with me is, like, they have a very definite point of view. They're an opinionated company, and they're doing things for a reason. Even when you think it's dumb, they're doing it for a reason. And maybe you disagree or agree with it, but like the new MacBook, Phil Schiller said outright, we wanted to make a Mac without any ports to see what was possible with the technology, where we'd be going in a few years. And we had to charge it, so we added one port because we kind of had to, and made it as multifunctional as we could. But our design goal was to see how far we could move that forward. And maybe you'd think that's a really dumb idea, but that's the idea that they had and executed on. And some people like it, some people don't. And I think these are the same things. They ask themselves, what can we do if we create these constraints and then execute on them? And they're not going to be for everybody, but I prefer that than a company who sort of doesn't know what they want to do and has 19 different versions of component parts put together, because it's a very easy yes or no. Either I'll get this keyboard or I'll go get like the Mateus keyboard with the big clackety clack things. I don't have to think about it too much, where if there was like 16 different versions, I would just be sitting there confused.
You've seen the Michael Dell trailer.
Can you play it? It's so great.
Let me play it. This is what happens when you care more about engineering.
Remember, what we do is eliminate the middleman and sell custom-ordered PCs made from stock parts direct to the consumer. That's it. Everyone with me? Good.
Hi. Nothing new to report at Dell. We haven't made any new computers yet, so we'll just keep selling the old ones for now. Okay, bye.
This is just an early prototype.
Looks great. Thanks.
Don't you want us to turn it on?
Nah, just start shipping.
But we need to make it great.
No. You need to make it cheap.
What is Project MP? A mouse pad?
Free with every shipment.
Who are we as a company? What do we stand for?
Don't think different. Think same.
And guys, we gotta make these laptops really thick with the fans in the back so they can see them cooling down.
Some men want to change the world.
Let me just... There we go.
Why would the E be like that?
I don't know. Doesn't matter. Nothing matters.
Others don't really care about that stuff. Michael Dell, rated PG-13, starts Friday.
That's the movie I want to see.
Oh, man.
Thank you, Conan O'Brien. Let's take a break. When we come back, I will talk about the Jobs movie and why you might or might not want to see it. There's a lot more, right? Did we covered the new Macs, I think. Yes?
Yes.
I think we've – and the new trackpads and stuff.
And the mouse.
Indeed. And the mouses.
It was a magical segment.
It was magical. Our show today brought to you by IT Pro TV. If you are an IT professional, you know that your job is not just fixing computers and getting the network running smoothly and keeping services on. It's learning about the future. It's keeping your skills up to date. And IT Pro TV is a great way to refresh your skills. Perhaps you're looking to get into IT. If you're watching this show or any of our shows, you're obviously, you know, a geek and smart enough to do it, and maybe that would be a great job for you. This is a great place to get those certs that'll help you get that job. IT Pro TV now has two studios. They do 50 hours of new programming every week, and they do it a lot like we do. In fact, they freely admit they were inspired by TWiT to do the same thing for IT. And if you can watch live, which you can do free, by the way, with a basic account, you'll get a great sense of what IT Pro TV is all about. They are like TWiT, but they're fun, they're engaging, they have a live chat room going all the time. They have courses in every possible IT subject, Apple, Microsoft, Cisco, A+, CCNA, Security Plus, MCSA, CISSP. I mean, look, Mac Integration Basics, Mac Management Basics, Certified Support Professional, Certified Technical Coordinator for Cisco. I love the EC Council stuff, the Certified Ethical Hacker. Sean Philip Oriano teaches this. And this is a great cert to get. They also have certs for cryptography and a hacking forensics investigator. Incredible stuff. There are more courses all the time, too. How would you like to be an expert in Wireshark? 2 hours on Wireshark. By the time you're through with it, you'd be there. Now, you can watch this on your Chromecast. You can watch it on your Roku. They've got a new iOS and Roku app that allow you to resume playback between devices. You get so much with your membership. Now, they have a basic plan which lets you watch live, and you should try that out because they record Monday through Friday, 9:30 a.m. Eastern till about 5 p.m. There are courses this week on Windows Server Fundamentals, MCSA Windows 10, Building a Computer. There you go. Wouldn't that be cool? And supporting Windows 7. Next week, more MTA Security Fundamentals, CompTIA Server Plus, and CCNP T-Shoot. If you want to get these certs, you could go to a technical school, spend a lot of money. You could buy a lot of books, or you can watch IT Pro TV. Have fun doing it. Put it on the big screen with your Roku. All you need is a basic account, and you can watch live every weekday starting at 9:30 in the morning. But if you want to, you know, have access to the incredible library, get the subscription, $57 a month. You get 2 months free when you subscribe for the entire year. If you're a year subscriber, you can download and put the stuff on your devices so you can get on the plane and still watch. Corporate group pricing also available. Clients include Harvard, MIT, UCSD, Stanford. I mean, this is good stuff. You get the measure up practice exams so you can take the test before you take the test. That's worth $79. Now, here's a deal for you. A 7-day free trial and 30% off for the lifetime of your subscription. That makes it less than $40 a month or $399 for an entire year. That is a great deal, and all you have to do is use the offer code MACBREAK30. So visit itpro.tv/MACBREAK and check it out. They've got great stuff for you. They do study group Q&A sessions in various subjects. So if you're about to take the A+, you could basically watch the courses, then join the study groups. I mean, this I could go on and on. Just do me a favor. Go there, itpro.tv/MacBreak. Watch it for free, and if you decide to sign up, and take that 7-day trial. Use the offer code MacBreak30 for 30% off forever. ITPro.TV. So I do want you to watch the new screensavers on Saturday. I did about 10 minutes with Danny Boyle, the director of the movie. I have huge respect for him. By the way, he's doing Trainspotting 2.
Oh.
Well, that, the same that, cast.
That, oh, man. That I'll go see.
Yeah, he's a great director.
So it'll be where what happened to them after after he left and took the money? And oh, man, that'll be awesome.
Isn't that awesome?
Yeah, that'll be.
So I had to, you know, Danny Boyle. I'm talking to Danny Boyle. It's like, you know, bowing down. He did Slumdog Millionaire.
Which was great.
He's a great director. And, you know, he came on the project. There's a really good article in Hollywood Reporter if you want to read the, oh, my God, the checkered past of the Steve Jobs movie. Remember, it was a Sony Pictures Entertainment movie. And then, in fact, you could read all of this in the hacked emails. And then they decided, they wanted to have Fincher direct it. They originally had Leonardo DiCaprio. Steve Jobs' widow, Lorene Powell Jobs, called DiCaprio and said, oh, don't do it. DiCaprio declined. They had Christian Bale. Lorene Powell Jobs called Christian Bale. He said, not going to do it. Remember, she's the number one stockholder in Disney. She has a little power in the world, right? And I think people love and respect Steve Jobs.
I think a call from her wasn't a matter of her. In Hollywood, I think a lot of people would twist their arm and you'll never work at, you know, you'll blah, blah. I think she was just asking them not to and they, you know, didn't. I'm sure she made a case for it.
Yeah. And you know, I have to say that everybody who's complaining about the movie, including Tim Cook and
me
and Mrs. Jobs, haven't seen it.
No, I haven't seen it. I'm not going to see it.
I'll say this. It's first of all, it's a tribute to Aaron Sorkin. It's one of his best scripts. It's really brilliantly written. It's written almost as a stage play. It's in three acts. As we all know, the first act is the original Macintosh announcement. The second act is the Next Cube announcement. Now remember, it's only the back, like the half an hour backstage leading up to this. That's it. They don't ever show the actual demo, the announcement. And then there's the iMac, Bondi Blue iMac announcement. And it's the moments before them. The first one shot in 16 millimeters. So it's Lisa's going, why is it so grainy? I said, I guess because it's the 80s. I don't know. And then 35 millimeter for the second act. And then digital for the third act. So there is this unconscious feeling of we're moving through time. Boyle's brilliant. Mm-hmm. There's some Citizen Kane moments. The moment where Jobs is fired from Apple. I don't think it was like this, but it's middle of the night. The rain's pouring down. The lighting is very dramatic. Scully is lit from like Dutch angle and he's lit. And it's like Citizen Kane. It's like very dramatic. It's a beautiful movie. If you could, I wish it was named Steve Jonas. Yes. Because you could then go see the movie and appreciate the movie. But for people.
Steve Hobbs.
For people like us who knew some of the people. Andy Hertzfeld is a huge character in this movie.
Right.
And by the way, the actor who does Andy really good. He's the only one who actually looks and acts like the person who's he's portraying. Seth Rogen as Wozniak is horrific because, well, the whole movie is full of stuff that never happened. Everybody acknowledges it never happened. Even Aaron Sorkin said, no, I made that up. He said it would be amazing if any of these things actually happened.
Right.
He said, if any of these conversations actually sound like the real thing, that would be amazing because I made it up. Fassbender doesn't look like Steve Jobs, doesn't act like Steve Jobs, and is a cold son of a bitch. And boy, the first half of the movie, you're going, why would anyone work for this guy?
He's Magneto. Right. He's
Magneto. he's an evil genius. But I understand for the purposes of movie making, you know, and he does go through a journey and softens by the end, as Steve Jobs did, in fact. But I feel most bad for Woz because there's all of this. For instance, I'm sure by now you've read all the articles about the inaccuracies. For instance, John Scully shows up every time, even though that everybody knows that Jobs never talked to Scully again after he was fired.
Right.
So he shows up each time. He's very fatherly and wise But what you realize is this is all about this is theater. This is like the Greek chorus that is talking to Jobs. This is almost his inner demons talking to him as he goes through this thing. But Woz, I feel bad for Woz, and I know Woz was a consultant, got paid $200,000. which he, by the way, for people who said, oh, of course Woz is going to say he likes it, he got paid. He doesn't need $200,000. No. That's not, I mean, I think he really wanted some input on this, but they have him doing things that he says, I never said any of that stuff. It's kind of Johnny One Note. Every time he shows up, all he says is, you know, his big thing is, could you just mention the Apple II team? And Woz says, absolutely not. I mean, John says, absolutely not. And he keeps showing up. Could you just mention the Apple II team? Woz says, I actually never said that to Steve Jobs. I did have a 30-second call with Scully once in which I said that, but that's the only time I've ever said that. But remember, it's Aaron Sorkin. What Aaron Sorkin's kind of saying is, can you, in through the voice of Woz, is could you please acknowledge me, Woz, as, I mean, who's the Apple II team's leader?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so it's very, it's Freudian stuff, right? The whole thing about Lisa is complete. They never mention, you know, the fact that Jobs has a wife and a family and that Lisa lived with them happily. I actually spent a long weekend with Jobs, his wife, and Lisa and Reed, his first child. And they were a loving family. They don't mention that. And I can see why Lorene's not happy. She's not even mentioned in the movie. Right. It's kind of like The Social Network, where Aaron Sorkin portrays Mark Zuckerberg as founding Facebook because he needed a girlfriend, when in fact...
The same girlfriend the whole way through.
Girlfriend. He got married to her. They're having a baby now. It's just he make it. So Sorkin's telling it's polemic. It's Sorkin with an issue that he wants to express, and he does it. And it's for if it were about a fictional character, it'd be fine. And I asked Danny Boyle about that. I said, you know, if Shakespeare was smart enough not to write about people who were still living or anybody that was still living that knew them.
Right.
But this guy passed away 4 years ago. He passed away young. So almost everybody in the movie is still alive. We have met most of these people.
Right.
So it's really a great work of fiction. But I really understand now why Tim and Lorene and the others were upset about this. Because unfortunately, Hollywood is very powerful. And that movie will become part of the Steve Jobs legend.
It depends on how popular it is, or it just kind of fades away.
Well, it's the early box office. It's not opening until October 23rd nationwide, but it's already open in a few markets, and the early box office is extremely good. But it's been marketed
in four theaters.
I've never seen a movie marketed this thoroughly. Even, I mean, Danny Boyle talking to me.
Yeah.
They really have reached out to everybody on this.
Yeah, there's subway posters all through New York, too.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. And I think it's because... And so this is – so Tim Cook, I understand why he says they're exploiting Steve. They know this will be a hot topic because it's Steve Jobs. And everybody has an iPhone. You know, they said everybody in the cast has an iPhone, as if that somehow qualified them.
Right.
to talk about what happened at Apple. I feel so bad because, I mean, I don't know. Yeah, maybe the royal family didn't like the Queen, you know? When they made that movie about Queen Elizabeth and the death of Diana, I'm sure the royal family thought this was horrible,
right?
You know, and inaccurate.
Well, and to me, it's not the part. Like, I want to see the Steve Jobs who got kicked out of Apple, made Next, failed at Next, and then somehow rose back with Apple.
And this isn't that.
And he's not a world famous dad. Like, he's not a child, a parental education doctorate or something. He's a technologist, and I wanted to see the technology. And once again, it feels like we're getting a movie that they wanted to humanize, maybe, but the expense of what made him really interesting.
I almost feel like the Kutcher movie was better.
Can you imagine Kutcher and that Jobs with this Woz? That would have been just
87% right now on the Rotten Tomatoes, 75% audience score. But again, not many people have seen it yet, so.
It could be a great movie, just not the right movie.
It is a great movie. That's the funny thing. Yeah. It's a great movie. But what I'm sad about is the power of this movie to shape a story. He's very one-dimensional in this movie. He's not – I mean, there's no – you would never understand why anybody would work for him if you saw this movie.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's why Andy Hertzfeld has his archive site. That's why others
folklore.org.
Yeah, exactly. And I just, like I said last week, I just hope that people who knew Steve and who are concerned about this are at least leaving their own stories behind. Even if they don't publish them, you know, they don't want to make any profit about it. They don't want to be seen as cashing in. But that doesn't mean they can't sit in front of a microphone and just tell stories and then put that flash drive in a safe deposit box and say, this does not get released. And this gets released as part of my papers I'm donating to my university. And it's available to researchers after I die.
I just,
the only way we're going to find out about that.
What it did, though, is make me really wish for the definitive biography and definitive movie.
That's not going to happen until it's there's enough perspective. There's a reason why, like, David McCullough's books are so great. Because not only is he a master historian and biographer, but he's writing about people who have been dead for decades. And that doesn't mean that now suddenly people are willing to talk, but it means that you can take a look at Truman's actions seen decades later. When you're not a product of that time, you're not being colored to think about, well, I was 23 years old during World War II. I served in Europe, so it makes perfect sense to me that he would do that. At some point, you need to be removed from history. You also need to be removed from that inner circle. So we're not going to see a great – I think few of us are going to live long enough to see that really great Steve Jobs biography.
Well, and the reality is, I mean, every biop, whether it's are all inaccurate to huge degrees. You know,
I think so.
Everybody's character. I mean,
it'd be very hard. I don't even know what I think of Steve Jobs. He was such a complex human.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I don't even know if you could characterize him as anyone.
I've had some interactions and both were very good and some were not so good. And so I definitely, you know, have a picture of a lot of those things, but I think that what I was left with was just an incredible intensity for producing a result. and if you were in that light, if you were in the vision that he was going towards, you got an enormous amount of energy. And if you looked like an impediment, then
part of the problem is that Steve Jobs is like Lennon, like John Lennon. He's like a hero for many of us. And it's going to be really hard for it almost feels sacrilegious. That's the depth of which it bothers me.
But that's also a good point. I mean, people, it must be so rough to be a friend or family member of these famous people, knowing that so many people positively or negatively want to cast Steve Jobs, your husband, your father, your friend, in a role that that person is going to find very, very useful. So oftentimes I think that Steve Wozniak, Steve Jobs, and John Lennon and Paul McCartney, they're people that very much need Paul McCartney to be the good guy and for John Lennon to be the druggy, wife-beating hippie who burned out very, very early. And there are people for whom they need John Lennon to be the person who worked for peace. He worked for quality. He wrote Imagine. Paul was the sellout who just wanted to write stupid pop songs. And the same thing, I think, is often at work between our heroes in engineering.
Yeah, there are moments in the movie where it's like an arrow to the heart. At one point, Jobs and Woz are fighting, and Woz says, "People think I'm Ringo. They think you're John Lennon. I'm John Lennon. You didn't do anything. I wrote the songs." And then Jobs calls him Rain Man. He said, "All right, Rain Man." It's arrows to the heart. So and it's a great movie. And Sorkin is probably at his best. He's the dialogue is amazing. I just wish it wasn't about people I knew.
Sure.
You know? And Danny Boyle, I really enjoyed talking to him. He is a great director. And his vision in this movie is brilliant. I mean, it's really well executed. Because it's kind of a claustrophobic movie, if you think about it. You're backstage in an auditorium. And they actually shot it at the Flint Center. The first one, and they shot the second one at the Opera House in San Francisco. He said, "We didn't go back to the Flint Center for the third one, even though Steve did, because we wanted a new venue." I don't know what the third venue is, but it's very – that part is – and, you know, it's Citizen Kane, you have, for some reason, Steve's wandering up in the rafters on the catwalk, and there's – I mean, it's just
I want to link back to something we were talking about earlier, that it's very, very clear that Danny Boyle and the producers of this movie weren't careless and they weren't thoughtless. They made movie that they wanted to make. I've been reading like Andy Hertzfeld did a blog post about how much time he spent talking to the filmmakers and how I don't want to put words in his mouth. The impression I got from the blog post was that he was impressed with how much care they wanted to put into this. Scott Canaster also wrote a blog post, this legendary writer, where he was on the Mac team, on the General Magic team. I think he then he moved to Google, and now he's at Google. He also, again, got an invitation to stop by, and he saw that was impressed by the level of detail and also the level of the conversations that they wanted to have with him. So, like, they you make a product that you set out to make with the vision that you had in your mind from the point of view that you're carrying through to your art. And sometimes it's going to be a product that's of use to people, and sometimes it's not of use to people. I absolutely agree with your concern that we don't want people to think Steve Jobs is the person in this movie. I'm glad that the filmmakers are so upfront about saying we are creating a fiction based on a real person. I think they're being very clear about that. But then again, there's still people who think that Salieri killed Mozart.
Right, right, right. Yeah. And I suppose in 100 years, none of this will matter.
We'll all be dead. Wouldn't that be great? We'll all be
dead. And, you know, I mean, the guy, Michael Stuhlbarg, who plays Andy Hertzfeldt, just nails Andy Hertzfeldt. It's so funny. Awesome. And Andy is portrayed very sympathetically, but he also said this is nothing like reality.
I love Michael Stuhlbarg.
He's great.
He was great. He was in the Coen Brothers, A Serious Man. He was in Boardwalk Empire. He was in the Hitchcock movie.
He is a mimic of First Water, because he's even got little vocal sound inflections of Andy. That's just so great. And Andy's so lovable. I just adore him. So, yeah, it's an impressionistic portrait. That's one of the things they've called it. Sorkin clearly went out and did all that research, gathered as many facts as he could. And then that's the other thing.
He threw it out.
No, he didn't. What's interesting, he put words in the so it was a mashup. Like, they have a scene with him in trying to get Scully to work, you know, the famous scene, you want to make sugar water for the rest of your life. But it's in a cafe. And I don't want to spoil it. Can you have spoilers for a biopic? It's in a cafe that late at night, and he's telling him, you know, same things you know he said in a different context, because I think it was on the roof or they were walking around. But it turns out the restaurant we're in is the restaurant run by Steve's birth father, because there's a line in the book that Mona, his sister, figured out in the Isaacson book, that Mona's sister figured out who their birth father, his birth father was. But Steve never went and introduced himself. But apparently he would go to the restaurant and look at him. Hmm. And so he says, Scully says, because Scully's whole thing is about his dad. Scully's like psychoanalyzing Jobs. What a weird position to put John Scully in. But he says, he says something like, well, I would have loved to have met your father. And Steve says, you have. It's that kind of thing.
This is the Steve Jobs from the Josiah Bartlett universe.
Yes, it's Josiah Bartlett. People are mad that I'm giving spoilers for a made-up movie. Never mind. I won't talk about it anymore. But
John
Scully
was CEO.
He was, I believe. I do believe that the point I'm trying to make is good movie, great movie maybe. Many are saying Oscar-winning performance by both Michael Fassbender and Kate Winslet. Oscar certainly should be Oscar-nominated. But I hope people who don't know the real story or some of the real story won't think that they're seeing the real story here. Really understand that it is completely fictionalized. But that doesn't make it not a good movie. And was it you, Andy, who said, just wait to the third weekend?
That was me.
Was you?
Yeah, that was Alex. Yeah.
And it's really third weekend from the main release, not from last week.
So don't see it till November.
Yeah, just watch it. Just watch it in December.
Or watch it on Netflix.
Watch it on Netflix, yeah, exactly.
Make it a nice holiday viewing film.
Exactly.
Yeah. I actually like the Isaacson book, and apparently nobody at Apple liked the Isaacson book, which kind of surprised me. Rick Tetzley's book, Becoming Steve Jobs, was also excellent. I mean, I devour this stuff. I'm very interested in understanding Steve better.
Maybe that's part of the problem, though. I really want to read is the one that, again, like David McCulloch, it doesn't try to psychoanalyze the subject. Right. It simply says, here's what this person did across his life over a great number of situations, and here are the stories from a great many points of view. Unfortunately, I mean, if Steve ever wrote down his own thoughts innermost, that's stuff that's going to be buried so deep we're never going to see it. I think you get into really dangerous territory when you try to see. We're going to start off by talking about the adoption agency where a young boy lost bereft. He reached out for a source of light, never grasping it. Like, okay, you are not there. You don't know. You didn't talk to Steve Jobs. Steve right. Jobs did not talk to you about what motivates him. So really all you can do is say, it's interesting enough when you compare his management styles during these three phases, that Apple on the ascendancy, then on the outs from Apple, and then running Next, and then Apple on the ascendancy again. That's why I was so interested in Sorkin's approach, because there's a long list of reasons why the Ashton Kutcher version was terrible. But it was just the most glaring problem was that you teleport from him being fired from Apple to being wooed back to Apple and skipping over to what to me is the most important part and the most interesting part, his time at Next. So we'll wait and see. I will see it on the first weekend because I'm looking forward to talking about it, but also because it's a Boyle film. It's a Sorkin script, and I'm going to like it. I'm going to be interested enough in it.
No, zero Sorkinisms, as far as I could tell. It's really, I think,
about the thing.
Some of Sorkin's best work. It's beautiful, the dialogue. There's and this is the other thing with Aaron Sorkin. You always get pulled out of the movie because you go, oh, nicely written.
See, I have that problem. I have that problem watching David Mamet movies.
Yeah, it's like Mamet. It's the same thing.
I love the way he said that.
Love his use of language.
Yeah.
Now, what were they talking about? Yeah. Our show today brought to you by Braintree. If you're a mobile app developer, a website developer, you're looking to have payments in your app, I got to say, you should not write this yourself. Steve Gibson says this. You should not write this yourself because security's hard, crypto's hard, money's hard, and you don't want to screw it up. Fortunately, there's an easy way. There is a really easy way. 10 lines of code, and your app can accept just about everything. Apple Pay, Android Pay, PayPal, Venmo, credit cards. It's Braintree. You know what I'm talking about. Everybody uses Braintree. I mean, if you want some recommendations, Uber uses Braintree. That's really the secret sauce for Uber is the payments, right? Braintree. But Lyft uses it too. If you got two head-to-head competitors using the same payment solution, you know it's got to be good. Hotels Tonight and Airbnb use Braintree. GitHub uses Braintree. You've used Braintree. You just didn't know it because it's so sweet, so elegant, so beautifully integrated into the experience. You know, one of the big problems, of course, and as a mobile app developer, you probably know this, is shopping cart abandonment. People get to the point of pay me, and then they go, yeah, I don't know. I don't trust this. I don't like the feeling. I'm confused. If your customers are already using a familiar payment option, you're going to have a much better chance to convert them. A couple of weeks ago, I spoke with Braintree's general manager for Braintree Mobile. Great guy. Really enjoyed the conversation. Ankur Arya. And I asked him about this one-touch. This is, by the way, what Uber uses. The one-touch platform and why it's so important.
If they can manage to get payment credentials the first time, the subsequent purchases are relatively friction-free, right? You can do one-touch buying and one-click buying. But sometimes the first time, it's difficult to convert a user and get them to save their payment credentials. And so the one-touch buying experience effectively makes it such that if you have a PayPal or a Venmo account, you can provide a one-touch buying experience the very first time that you as a merchant interact with that PayPal or Venmo user, which is pretty powerful and just great for an overall buying experience.
Braintree really has it figured out. And by the way, fast payouts to you, totally secure, fraud protection and all that. And it's about 10 lines of code. It'll integrate so easily for you. In fact, if you don't have the time, they'll do it for you. They've got great support. Braintree, a full stack payment solution, support for all payment types your customers want. It's a single integration across all platforms, superior fraud protection, customer service, and fast payouts. And your first $50,000 in transactions fee free when you go to BraintreePayments.com/MacBreak. BraintreePayments.com/MacBreak. So I've been getting some triumphant emails from people who say, oh, I finally figured out how to get menu meters to work on El Capitan. Or somebody was saying, like, my FireWire audio wasn't working. But I figured it out. It's a simple terminal command that disables kernel protection. We've talked about this before. This is that new, what do they call it, rootless feature?
System integrity protection.
Yeah. Is it dangerous to disable it? I mean, we didn't have it last time.
I mean, well, it's so again, it's like you want multi-layered security now, because the people who are trying to attack Apple platforms are incredibly valuable. And for a while, no one really bothered with them because the Mac had really tiny market share. But now it's a vast and sprawling ecosystem, and people want in on it. And the cost, it's always the cost of how much it takes to attack a platform. And if you can get your virus on there, you know, we saw X-Ghost and things like that recently. But basically, traditionally we had, or over the course of years, they've added things like Gatekeeper, which doesn't let you install software outside of trusted developers in the App Store, and sandboxing so that if one app got compromised, it couldn't compromise the rest of apps. And system integrity protection is another line in that. So there's something called privilege escalation attacks, and that means that they can get some code on your machine that elevates it to root, and then from there it can do a lot more damage. And what system integrity protection does is protect certain directories so they can't be written to by anything other than trusted Apple processes. So that even if all else fails, if the malware detection fails and Gatekeeper fails and everything else, and the virus, the malware gets on your machine, it still can't make significant changes to it. So it minimizes the amount of damage it can do. And if you turn that off and you do manage to get an infection, then you don't have that protection anymore.
So don't turn it off, folks.
No. You're a normal human being. Stop playing with it. Get a better audio. Stop hacking your kernel. You don't need to.
Yeah. It would be nice. I presume that everybody who's, you know, like you mentioned this, menu meters or anybody whose program stopped working, they'll fix this, right? They just
super duper fixed it.
Super duper fixed it, yeah. So just wait for an update. It seems so risky. And, you know, one of the things that makes the Mac so great is it is so safe to use. I confess, I was very upset by Gatekeeper. I thought, oh, man, they're just going to start forcing us to use the Apple Store and you won't be able to get third-party apps anymore. And Apple didn't do that. I was wrong. Gatekeeper is fantastic, and you should have it set at least that middle setting where it says, I only will install signed applications.
Right.
You can always get around it easily enough. I just think Apple's doing the right thing. They're really doing the right thing. And just don't mess with it. Now, here, I have a question for you. We just showed this article you wrote. App Store removes root certificate-based ad blockers over privacy concerns. So what's the story there?
So they and it was actually surprising that they approved them to begin with, but there were a couple apps that came out, and what they did was they offered to get rid of ads inside apps like Facebook. And what they did, and it was sort of clear but not really, is they had you insert install a root certificate.
That's a man in the middle attack, basically.
You basically getting you to man in the middle attack yourself. Yeah. And it was a root certificate so that all of your traffic would go through this company, and they would filter out the ads, and it would break SSL TLC protection. And they say that they don't look at it, but I mean, their trust nobody means you literally trust nobody. And the ramifications of this are just far reaching and beyond what I think was properly described to people, because all they heard was get rid of ads inside apps, and not we're going to hand over every private communication, every password, every secure financial transaction to this company. And then they sort of bolted on this thing where if you agreed to look at their marketing surveys, they would give you points towards other stuff. And Apple realized what was happening, and they just removed all of those apps from the
app store. So one of these was Bean Choice, B-E-E-N, Choice. And they responded to you on Twitter that they're going to change how they do things. But now that'll make it so you can't do the ad blocking inside of apps.
Yeah, because they're not really ad blocking. It's sort of like when they had the old proxy server days. They were taking all your traffic and removing the ads for you. Right. They weren't actually blocking the ads.
And that is the only way to do it, frankly. You know, Apple's ad blocking does not extend to apps. It's Safari only.
Yeah, so far, yeah.
Have you noticed, by the way, a lot of sites seem to be getting around the ad blockers on Safari? I feel like I'm seeing more ads.
They certainly responded to it.
Yeah.
We haven't changed anything, and we're only seeing, like, I saw an article saying it was 5 to 10% of people, and I don't think our numbers have been anything different than that.
I got overexcited. Ad blockalypse didn't happen.
A lot of people thought it would, though.
Most people just want to see ads, I think. Actually, it's interesting because Google last week announced AMP, which is an accelerated mobile platform that really is all about speeding up and simplifying, and one of the web access on mobile, and one of the things it does is it eliminates JavaScript, which is one big source of issues.
Google's a huge source of
I know, and they said only Google approved JavaScript. They also eliminated the image tag, which is okay. Thank you.
My biggest complaint when I hit a site that's slow is that it's slow. I mean, I don't really care about the ads. I mean, it's
the speed.
It's the speed that really.
I tell you, on mobile though, it is not unusual for ads to make it hard or impossible to read the content.
Because
they sit on top of it, or they
you can't find scroll, the X.
It's broken.
Yeah, exactly.
It's broken on mobile. So there are times that really bothers me. But you know what? The truth. We don't have to tell anybody. But the dirty truth of it is, we don't see ads. I don't see ads. Mm. There's ads. But I just don't see them. I tune them out. I'm looking at the content. I know there's stuff floating around.
I might have said the story before, but I went to lunch with Georgia, and we were trying to find the chicken fingers on the menu, and neither of us could find them. And we asked the waiter, and he goes, they're right here on the side. And it was in a sidebar in a different color, and our brains are unable to see that anymore.
Right.
It's amazing when you look.
Oh, that's probably why, right? It was a banner ad.
Well, it's amazing. You know, if you've ever used any eye trackers, it's amazing how, especially people who have spent a lot of time on the web, you know, you'll just see these heat maps that go right down where all the content is, and just it's amazingly dark.
It's in our biology because for evolutionary reasons, we need to survive. It's changes in environment we have to notice. And so we and cats do it, and everybody does it. All mammals do it. You start to tune out consistent sounds or consistent stuff. Because you only need to see the thing that's important,
right.
So that you.
That's
won't
why they move tail lights around on different car models to try to get you to see the tail lights.
Yeah, remember they finally ended up putting them in the rear window. But you're going to get used to that too, right?
Right.
It's human. It's just the biology of it. Not even human. Cats.
It's the way the way brains work.
Yeah, I've seen brain scans of cats. You know, if there's a noise, at first the cat gets startled, but after a while it recognizes it, and then it doesn't hear it anymore. It literally doesn't hear it anymore.
Right. And if you did hear all that stuff.
You wouldn't want to.
Crazy.
You'd be Matt Murdock.
Daredevil. Am I right?
Yep.
Oh.
Your keyboard paid off, Leo.
I looked at the D, and there it was.
I was just thinking Carrie on
Homeland.
Homeland without her drugs.
She hears everything. All the sounds. Or Steve Jobs on acid. Same thing.
There you go.
That line gets in there, too.
Yep.
It's all in the movie. It's like every quote is in the movie. Porsche is going to use AirPlay because Google wants to know too much about Porsche drivers.
And it sounds like Porsche's concern a little bit is connected to actually the fact that Google is making cars.
Apple's making cars too, aren't they?
They are, but they're not asking for all the engine information. I think that's silly.
It sounds like Google initially asked for that, and then everyone said no, and they said, okay, then we don't want it anymore. We'll just do the regular version. But at Porsche remembers an old conversation and got kind of nervous about it.
Yeah. So it's like how the car works, like, you know, in inside stuff.
Well, it wasn't really inside stuff. If you hook up your...
Google's denied this, by the way.
If you've had any of those OBD, whatever, you pop it into the thing, and you can get all that information from your car right now. But what they were asking for is to put that into the app, which would theoretically tell you about how the person drives and could then drive...
That's like my OBD2 port, and I actually have an app that collects all that information.
And CarPlay 2 will integrate with the manufacturer to provide manufacturer apps now, but that's not shared with Apple either.
Also, I think Google responded to this by saying that report was not accurate, that they weren't asking for the full stream, the full smash. They clarified that there are times when it wants to know things like what gear is the car in, because obviously if the car is in park or neutral, then you can let the driver do a lot more with interactivity than you could if the car is in motion, similar for acceleration, similar for braking. But they've unfortunately, however, that doesn't let them completely off the hook because they were a little bit cagey about what data that they do want to get from the manufacturer. But it doesn't seem to be nearly as bad as what these initial reports are making.
I have to say, from a geeky perspective, I would love for my iPhone or Android to be able to get all that information rather than having to hook something into the port because it's just cool. You know, I mean,
there are these cool it would be diagnostic devices that work via Bluetooth or Wi-Fi.
No, I have one. It's just that it on my car it makes it difficult to get smog, it turns out.
Yeah. So that's the nicest thing I ever got from my old car. It's like I suddenly have the Millennium Falcon telemetry like on my dashboard.
Awesome.
I can see everything going on. Especially when you have an older car like me, where it's like I used to get a lot more nervous like in traffic in the summer. Because it's a reliable car. I've never had a problem with it. But, you know, one of the things that might get it to stall out and die and have a really bad day on I-95 is traffic and it starts to overheat. But now that I can actually see, nope, I've this 206 degrees and holding. I have seen 216 degrees and holding. It's perfectly fine, but I'm still going to try to get it off the next exit. But I'm fine right now. It's like having a fitness watch for your car.
Right.
You say, okay, my pulse is up like that, but I'm not going to worry because look, the number is falling down.
No matter how hard I try, anytime I have that data open, it changes. It literally changes the way I drive. You know, yeah. You sit there and you start becoming competitive about how you're using all the.
Yeah.
You know, you can't not
gamification.
Absolutely true. My commute, such as it is, like into the city, used to be scored by not like I would be driving fast or dangerously, but I would be very, very pleased that, oh, well, look, sometimes it takes as long as an hour. This time it only took like 53 minutes. And now ever since I started using that thing, the score is, yes, I got 31 miles to the gallon. It's a new record. This is a car that when it was brand new was supposed to get like 22 on the highway. So,
and you've squeezed it.
Exactly. It's like getting free gas. I like beat the oil companies by driving. And also the weirdest thing ever is like passing through a speed trap. And because like I know that the best gas mileage has me like doing about the speed limit and not accelerating very bad, very. And so I go by this speed trap and think, aha, I've beaten you, speed trap, by driving safely and below the posted limit. But that, I've cracked your system. I feel like I'm getting away with something.
I was talking to an engineer, a BMW engineer, and I said it would be really great if I could actually do things rather than just read the information. I really want to be able to change, you know, air, fuel mix, and everything else. And he was like,
Do you see those hacking reports, Alex? Did you?
Actually, somebody who works here has a Audi that he routinely hacks. Just gonna talk to Russell.
I'll change the Volkswagen.
That sounds like fun. There's ways to get around that stuff. I just set it so that the alarm goes off when anybody goes over 70 miles an hour, Lisa. I mean, no. She hates it when I do that, by the way. And I always know. She comes back and said, did you set that alarm, the speed alarm again? I said, oh, I'm sorry. I forgot. So, good news. Apple TV and iPad Pro will launch online in late October, not so many weeks off, and hit stores early November, right?
Can't wait.
Can't wait.
Yep.
Got to start saving now. So if it's on sale on the website in late October, does that mean I can actually order it and get it, or just is that one of those pre-order things?
Pre-order.
Yeah. So it'll still be early November. I wish they would tell us so I could, like, set the alarm to get up at midnight.
I want to get one. I've been not very excited about the iPad Pro or the iPad in general for a long time. I mean, but
the Pro gets your
Pro.
I'm
very excited. The Pro plus iOS 9 is
plus Procreate. Yeah.
Oh, so this would have to come out at the same time as iOS 9, right?
9.1.
Yeah, that's what I mean. 9.1.
But I even mean just like the improvements they've just made with 9.0. The ability to have split screens and the ability to work really, really well with mechanical keyboards.
Yeah.
Taco emoji, Andy.
And just to give this October 8th.
Keep your emoji. Let me boldface by hitting Command B. That's all I want. Oh, my God. It's switching apps by hitting Command Tab. What a miracle that would be on an iPad. For a company, I mean, it's funny as hell because we mentioned that Stephen Levy article, and they come back again. Well, that's why we put so much multi-touch into the trackpad, because we still, I'm very, very sure, you don't want to take your hands off the keyboard to touch the screen unless you're using an iPad, in which case, hey, we don't even care what you do. Command Tab, that's all I
hippies.
Want. That's all
Command
I ever
Tab would be nice, hippies. Wouldn't it?
That'd be awesome.
Yeah.
I never even really thought about
just
that.
You got that now with the Bluetooth on iOS 9 with Bluetooth keyboards. You have Command Tab.
You do,
right? Exactly. Yeah. They've added a whole bunch of keyboard support. One of the problems before was that they weren't allowing developers to get access to the keyboard. So if they wanted to put in their own key commands, it was going to be damn near impossible. They would have to do they'd have to write such low level code to make that work that it was just not worth it for so many people. Especially given that Apple was had their own suite of iOS productivity apps.
So I have the Samsung A9.
Oh, God.
Mm-hmm.
I know. I feel so terrible. I want to take it back right now.
This was such... It's like bloggers, they're not engineers. This is one of those things that my mom called me and she was worried about what chip she had on her phone.
I have the wrong chip.
No, so, but the thing is that it's So what happens is Apple used to use Samsung to source all their chips from, and then last year they used Taiwan Semiconductor Manufacturing Company to source the Apple A8, and they didn't have enough, which is why some devices got A8 and some didn't get upgraded to A8. This year they decided to dual source, so they got from Samsung and from TSMC. I'm going to keep saying that wrong. And dual sourcing is hard because they both have different manufacturing platforms. Samsung is using 16 nanometer or 14 nanometer, and the other one's using 16 nanometer. And those are really just branding names, but they are different ways of assembling
chips.
They're
even different sizes. I mean, the chips are bigger.
It's sort of like, and people get the wrong idea that like there's a bad chip. There's no bad chip. What Apple does is say, in order to qualify for our Olympic sprinting team, you need to make 100 meters in less than 9 seconds. And if you make it by 8.9 or 8.95, that's all fine because you made it by under 9 seconds. So what happened here is the Samsung chip is slightly smaller. So my understanding is it can run at a higher capacity for longer. Before it has to be brought down because of thermal constraints. And that means that, yeah, you can deplete that faster if you try really hard using a synthetic benchmark like Geekbench, while the TSMC one ramps down faster, so it lasts slightly longer, doesn't peak for as long. And on the synthetic benchmarks, that looked like a lot, but Apple very quickly said with real world use, it's like 2 or 3%. And now a bunch of sites have done testing and said, hey, guess what? It's 2 or 3%. And if you really, really care about battery life, maybe 2 or 3% is something to you. But if you want to run your processor hot for a longer time, maybe you're better off with the Samsung chip. And it's such a multidimensional, complicated thing that we spent like 3 or 4 days just wasting incredible amounts of ink on. It's one of those things like people feel like they have to make a gate every time.
So is there an easy way for people to tell which chip they have?
Yeah, you can download Lyrium, which is a free app, and run it. And if it's MAPP, then it's the Taiwan Semiconductor Manufacturing chip. And if it's just APP, it's basically the code name for the device, N66.
I have the N66AP, so I lost in this.
Or you gain because you have a smaller chip that can run faster longer. I mean, it depends on how you look at it.
By the way, do like I did, because I was looking and I couldn't figure it out. So I ended up paying for the full version of Lyrium, which is, I mean, this is a really crappy app.
It just pulls the device ID.
It's doing really well right now.
But so there's no way to find out what the device ID is without running a program like this, I guess. There's no, Apple doesn't tell you.
And it's only 6 Plus, right?
It says the 6S plus or the 6. It's the S's, right? It's only the S's.
Yeah, it's only the S's. The other ones were all single sourced.
So I was so sad. I almost threw it away. I've got the wrong chip. I'm going to buy another one.
They're both great chips. Just they have slightly different characteristics because they're made by different fabs. Right. Apple doesn't fab their own chips.
Right.
And you can get more variants like this depending on the cell tower that you're on, which is what makes it so crazy.
So that's a good point. You'll get more than 2 to 3% difference if all sorts of things. You leave Facebook running.
If me and Andy are on different cell, Facebook, that's a huge impact on your battery. Yeah. Skype, if Andy and I are on different cell towers with identical phones, we'll have different. Right. It's a very complicated thing.
So I've been getting such stunning battery life on the iPhone 6S Plus that I don't even care if it's better with a TSMC chip. Yeah. I am very, very happy. This thing.
I was at New York Comic Con for 4 days last week, doing with the iPhone 6S Plus, and I've even with the previous iPhone 6. Again, I'm leaving the house at like 8:30 in the morning, hitting the convention floor just before 10, staying on the convention floor until 7, not a single charger, not back to a charge until 9, and going home still with about 15 to 20% battery life after taking lots of pictures, taking 4K video, sending texts, sending messages, using it as a hotspot.
Yeah. It's remarkable. And that's a real argument for getting the bigger of the two phones, because I do think the battery life is significantly better on the.
It's also an argument for getting an iPhone over an Android device.
It is. In fact, there is nothing comparable in the Android space.
Yeah, absolutely nothing.
I'm going to get the new Nexus 6P, which with Marshmallow and a big old battery might be pretty good, but we'll see.
And Android M is really, really good. The increased battery performance is not trivial. Because it's doing Apple-like stuff, like trying to sense when the phone is just not being used. And so why don't we just like throttle everything down, and also being a little bit more responsible about allowing apps to run.
Right. Combining
but I'll be
locks,
really I'll
like
be
that.
Really surprised if you'll get all day battery life out of any Android device.
I'll use whatever has the best battery life, because that really is more important than almost anything else.
I used to have a horrible time roaming in America because the cell towers are tuned differently, and that means that my radio is broadcasting longer and stronger right. than normally. I just put it in low power saving mode right away, and it lasted me throughout the day, and that's never happened before.
What do you lose in low power?
It turns off a bunch of things. Like it'll be much more conservative about updating data through the networks, and it turns off background updates. It turns off a lot of animations.
So it's basically a lot of bells and whistles.
I mean, you will, like, for example, it won't just pull your mail. You'll have to launch the mail app. You'll have to launch Twitter to see updates.
I don't mind that.
So it's a convenience thing. It's slightly less convenient.
I kind of like, though, that an app doesn't do that in the background, but just when I open it, gets my new mail. I think it doesn't take that long.
It depends if you're flying.
Or if you need that like some apps don't notify you unless they have the background.
So some of the notifications are important, yeah, I guess. I turn off mail, as you know, turn off mail notifications.
Yep.
I don't want to get Twitter notifications. Last thing I want to get is Twitter notifications.
If you have a lot of notifications, and you've turned them off already, it's not a big deal. If you only have a few and they're hugely important to you, and it's not just notifications, it's a whole bunch of little things. And it will automatically turn off once you're above 80% again if you start charging. And it'll automatically ask you to turn on if you get below 20%. So I'm super happy with it.
Yeah.
And that'll add 2 to 3 hours of overall battery life to your day.
Nice. Very good.
Where do you find this?
Where is that?
So you go to settings, battery.
It's in the battery settings, yeah.
There's a new battery
tab. Low power mode. Low power mode temporarily reduces power consumption until you could fully charge your iPhone. When this is on, mail, fetch, hey Siri's turned off.
Yeah.
Background, not listening anymore. Automatic downloads and some visual effects. That's not bad. I mean, turning off Hey Shlomo might not be a bad thing.
And your battery turns yellow, so you can tell that it's on.
Oh, yeah. Okay, cool. Well, it's not like I need to do it, but it's a good thing to know. Like if you're traveling, and you just know you're not going to get to a charger till midnight.
Or if you're – the big thing that always scares me is I don't have where to charge, and I need the alarm to go off the next day.
Right.
And usually what I do there is I just turn on airplane mode.
Yeah, like that's a good idea. Yeah.
Because that usually greatly increases the battery.
Well, that's one of the things I'm looking forward to with the iPad Pro. I got that 16,000 milliamp hour anchor battery, and that means for a phone, I don't even think about where an outlet is. And to have an iPad Pro as my main computer for a couple of days, that would also mean plugging into a wall outlet would be great, but I have enough to last me through 2 or 3 days. I'm good.
Yeah.
You got to love Elon Musk.
That's a great segue. I was about to say, battery company.
We should have come out of Sorkin. You have to.
He can have you killed so thoroughly, no one will even remember you're even alive. You have to love Elon Musk. He's so commensurate.
An article from The Guardian. Dismissing claims that Apple is poaching key members of staff from Tesla to work on its long-rumored self-driving car project, Musk said, important engineers, they've hired people we fired. We always jokingly call Apple the Tesla graveyard. If you don't make it at Tesla, you go to work at Apple. I'm not kidding.
I think this is what's known as failing upward.
He also said when he was doing the unveiling of the Model X, he was talking to a German newspaper. They asked him, do you take Apple seriously as a competitor in the automotive market? And he replied, laughing, did you ever take a look at the Apple Watch? He added, no, seriously, it's good that Apple's moving and investing in this direction. But cars are complex compared to phones or smartwatches. You can't just go to a supplier like Foxconn and say,
"Guys, gonna just walk in here." It's such shades of Ed Colligan.
Well, I mean, I guess the thing is,
there might be some merit in what he says.
It could be, but
his background's not in cars. His background was in software too, and he managed to do a phenomenal job in cars. So the background of the company shouldn't be a weighing factor.
Well, and it's just the problem is, anytime you say any of that, it sounds so much like the phone manufacturer sounded when Apple making a phone. It's so complicated. You don't understand what's going to happen here.
But everybody talks trash like that. Even in Stephen Levy's piece, I think it was I don't want to misidentify him, but a senior executive that we all know was talking about how talking about Microsoft Surface and saying, well, you know, it's great that Microsoft is acknowledging that we were right all along to start manufacturing their own hardware. Like, okay, but Microsoft could also say, gee, it's good to see that Apple is saying that we were right all along to have a tablet that has a keyboard and desktop class software for it. So it's kind of nice to see people worth $1 billion each acting like pro wrestlers. You know, I want to see Elon Musk with a feather boa. I want to see Tim Cook with a huge belt like over his shoulder.
What you gonna do, Tim Cook, when Elon Musk goes wild on you?
I want Phil Schiller.
And he said, it's amazing that one event validated so much of what Apple does and held us up as the gold standard. That's flattering.
Well, especially with Surface, that's a little bit gutsy, I think.
Yeah. All right. You know, I did order that Surface book because it looked pretty sweet. And I think really the real thing that's interesting is I don't think touch on a laptop is a bad idea. And
so awesome.
I think it's actually a good idea. I don't think there's a chance that Apple will ever do a touch.
OS X is not a touch operating system. They're going from the other direction. You might see, like with the iPad Pro, iOS growing into something that is on. As far as I know, they've had iOS running on MacBook Air like stuff for several years. They just haven't shipped it.
I always feel like when Tim Cook said that they have no intention of merging into OS, I felt like what he didn't say there is just eventually you'll get tired of the other OS.
One of them.
We'll just keep on withering. You know, merging. They'll just be one slowly dies out.
I was joking about this before, but in 10 years, I expect to have a little Apple marble that I keep in my pocket, and any piece of glass that I pick up, whether it's a phone-sized piece of glass or a 30-inch piece of glass, will just have my Apple operating system on it.
Ooh.
And it'll be totally decoupled, and it'll just understand the context of what's available, whatever resources are available, and it'll fit itself to those.
I like that.
No, you're going to have a little marble, but that's going to be the new Apple keyboard. It will only have a left button and a right button.
The keyboard are my fingers, Andy. The keyboard is my fingers. You'll have to
think the right thoughts.
Too many vowels are confusing. That's why we only gave you two.
Hey, one of the things that happened this week is that LastPass, which is the password vault that I have been recommending for a long time. We use it. We use the enterprise version here at work. I've used LastPass and turned a lot of people on to LastPass at home. Was sold to a company I'm not so fond of called LogMeIn. I've been looking at other alternatives, and you know, there's a lot of great Mac alternatives like 1Password and Dashlane, which really came from the Mac side.
Mm-hmm.
But none of them do what LastPass does, as far as I'm concerned. We will be talking in just a few minutes, for those of you watching live on Security Now, with the CEO and founder of LastPass, Joe Segrist, will join Steve Gibson and me, and we'll be asking him, what the heck?
We love LastPass.
We love LastPass.
And I will admit that I used LogMeIn for a little while and really grew to dislike it a lot. So I looked at it and I immediately thought when I saw the purchase, I was like, oh, well, enough of that.
I don't begrudge Joe his $110 million payday.
Yeah, well played. Well played. The problem is that there's nowhere to go still. I mean, I know the other ones are good, but as a company, there's nowhere to go.
No, I spent much of last night trying alternatives.
How'd that work for you?
Yeah, none of them really got me excited.
Yeah,
so exactly. I'm still using LastPass until such time as, you know, something bad happens, but we shall see. We shall see. Anyway, that's a little program note for those of you watching live. For those of you not, do listen to the Security Now this week. Let's take a break and come back with your picks of the week. I see you've got some. But first, I've got a pick for your cables. We were talking about Thunderbolt, how much we love Thunderbolt. And if you are a pro, really, you probably already know that Thunderbolt was originally an optical technology. Intel and Apple decided, we'll go copper to get it out the door. But really, there are advantages to optical cables, as you well know. The faster
they go, very, very long.
They go very, very long. And there's a disadvantage that a lot of people talk about. When we put in our sand and we have orange optical cables throughout the building, the engineer said, whatever you do, don't step on those cables, don't bend those cables, don't touch those cables. Well, I'm here to tell you, Corning, the masters of glass, have figured out a new kind of optical cable, fiber optic cable, has all the benefits of old-style optical cables, but now much more robust. And I'm going to do a little demo here of these new optical cables. They offer them in Thunderbolt and now USB 3.0 optical cable. The USB 3 cable goes 165 feet, 50 meters. The Thunderbolt cable, 60 meters, 200 feet without any data loss. They're thinner. They're more flexible.
And you can pinch them.
And that's what's amazing. Now, I've got a little demo. Corning gave me this laser pointer.
It hurts me just to watch these. I saw this demo at CES, and it hurts me just to watch it. As someone who uses a lot of fiber, you're always like, oh, don't.
So this is the new Corning fiber optical cable. They've stripped off the end so I could put it on this laser. And because that's how fiber optics work, is a very, very rapid pulsing light going down. And you can see that it's now passing through the cable. But watch, you couldn't do this with your fiber optic, with your grandpa's fiber optic cable. Tie it in a knot.
Don't do that.
And it still works. But wait a minute. I'm going to really make you hurt, Alex. They gave me this block. They said, try this. Try crimping the cable. You know,
do not fold, spindle, and mutilate.
I mean, this is really crimped. This is a tight, tight fit. I'm going to jam it in this hole here. Look at that. That's, you know, let's do some more. So were they doing this at CES?
Yes, it hurts just watching it.
I love it. I know. I said, I'm not going to do that on the ad. What if it breaks? They said, it won't break. I said, but it's fiber optic. It won't break. I am crimping it four times, and it's a tight crimp, right? It's a tight bend. Now, what do you think? Will we still see the light coming from this laser? The heck you say. It takes a bending, and it keeps on sending. Isn't that amazing? I have to say, these are great cables. Now, they're a little more expensive, but you get it's because of the high speed, high throughput, accuracy, and length and durability of these new cables. They're really, really great. Thinner, lighter, stronger, 50% thinner than traditional copper cables, 80% lighter. And we're going to make it affordable by giving you a $50 off deal. If you get the 50-meter USB 3.0 optical cable, $30 off on the 30-meter USB dot optical cable. This is for anybody who has, and I think we all use a lot of Thunderbolt, and you want to be able to put the loud, noisy drives somewhere in a more secure place, perhaps. Mm-hmm. You can go a long way.
Well, and there's some cameras, like the cameras or the capture cards or whatever, that you may want to have all in one place. So like the Blackmagic cameras have Thunderbolt. Some of them have Thunderbolt, you know, connections.
Right.
And so you can actually use this as a camera case.
Yeah. They're so thin. It's so cool. Take a look at the Corning Thunderbolt and USB 3.0 optical cables. Corning, of course, the best known name in fiber optics. They know glass. They know how to make this stuff lighter, stronger, and better. And now it's available everywhere for you. But go to corning.com/twit to learn more and use the promo code TWIT to save up to $50 on your USB 3.0 optical cable. Corning Optical Cables. We thank them for their support of Mac Break Weekly. Mr. Rene Ritchie, what would you like to share with us as a pick of the week this week?
I have two. I have a pick and I have a tip. The pick, actually, I'm going to rapid fire three of them. And that is Tweetbot went to version 4, Overcast went to version 2, and Fantastical went to version 2.5. And those are all three apps that I use every day, all day. Tweetbot is a paid upgrade, but again, I'm using that 8 hours a day. So paying $5 for it to me is just total non-brainer. And it's got tons of great new features.
This is for iOS or Mac?
iOS. These are all the iOS updates. Overcast as streaming before it was download only, so you can stream now, which is really nice if that new episode of Mac Break comes out and you just have to listen to it now. You can do that no matter
where you
are.
It's also free, right? Marco's eliminated the payments.
Yeah, he didn't want anyone to have to suffer with the lesser version of the app. So it's free now, but you can do a monthly patronage if you want to. You can send him $1 or something a
donate.
Month.
Donate, yeah.
Yes, absolutely. And I donated the heck out of that app because, again, I use it all the time. So it's really worthwhile. And I want him to keep making it. I want to incentivize all these developers to keep making their stuff.
You bet. You bet.
So those are all. And the Fantastical upgrade has a slight upgrade to the iPhone app and an upgrade to the Apple Watch app. Which is, you know, great because that's one of the Apple doesn't do reminders on the Apple Watch yet. And with Fantastical, you get all your reminders there.
Right.
Which is terrific. The tip I wanted to, I was talking to John Gruber about this when the Apple Watch was first announced, and they have a Mickey Mouse licensed clock face, but there was no like Superman. We both had Superman watches when we were kids. And then it struck me that with the Photos face, you could basically put any cartoon character you want on it. So I don't know if I can show this properly.
I have your article. I've been watching all these posts on Instagram as you'd put different characters on your watch. It's so funny.
It's so great. And I put Batman on the black one, and you can put anyone, Bart Simpson, you could put Cartman, any character, My Little Pony, whatever you like. You do sometimes want to make sure that if there's bright areas, you don't put them over where the actual clock information is, and you don't get complications with the photo face yet, which I find is a huge disadvantage. But if it's the weekend or after hours and I just want to have some fun, then I don't really care about that. In fact, it's an advantage not to be distracted. So I just went to town. I tried a bunch of them, and it's fairly easy to do. And once you do it, you just keep wanting to do it, and it makes the watch a lot more fun for me.
Could you put a bunch of them in one album and then have them rotate?
Yeah, so you get to choose what album you sing. I think it's by default it's the Favorites album, so I just put a bunch of them. Like I put Superman. I even put a live photo of the original Fleischman cartoon and Superman with the cape waving in the background.
I love it.
So when I turn my watch, you just see Superman standing there with his cape waving.
Oh, so if it's a live photo, it'll move. It'll animate.
It'll animate. Yeah, it animates in the way the time lapses do, which is really nice. It doesn't always nail the frame rate, but a lot of times it does, and then it looks super fantastic.
Super cool.
So it added a lot of fun to the watch.
You can have Mickey Mouse taps his foot pretty well, but you can get close.
Yeah, they don't, like, the arms don't move. Like basically they can animate a little bit, but they don't move and tell the time the way the licensed clock face does.
Play with that. I have so much information on the Apple Watch. I hate to use the photos.
The only thing I want is the complications. I know. Like, I want to be able to design how my complications show up.
I know.
I
use that info face because it's so complication rich.
The modular one is terrific, and it actually makes use of all the different categories that they've established for the comp. And things like carrot weather are fantastic because it'll mess with you in the complication. It'll say it's raining. Just kidding. You can go out.
Yeah, this is modular. That's the one I use just because I want all that information.
My problem is it doesn't have seconds on the main face.
Yeah, it should have seconds. You're right. What the heck? It should have hundreds of a second.
Sorry. Yes, it should.
It should have time code.
Not that I'm bitter.
Why doesn't it have time code?
Well, time code I can understand maybe, but seconds is very important.
That's why I use this one.
What's your favorite band right now, Renee? You got a new one?
I got the product red one, and I'm waiting to get the Hermes one still because it hasn't been in stock, but I'm using the blue... Leather
one.
Rose gold watch right now, which I think is a really nice combination.
Yeah, that's pretty. You look like a Cub Scout. For sports, is it still the fluoroelastomer the best one for working out and stuff? Because, you know, I'm wearing this more while I work out because it's actually a really accurate heart rate monitor. I'm kind of surprised.
I like the Milanese just because it really breathes. Like the sport is nice. It has a trench underneath it that wicks away sweat better. But the Milanese one, it is a little heavy, but it really breathes when you're doing a lot of activities.
Yeah. Okay, well, that's what I've been wearing, so.
Still on the rubber.
You like the rubber one?
Yeah.
I refuse to spend the money that Apple asks for these bands, so.
Yep.
This one just came with the watch.
Funny, I saw Vincent Nguyen from Slash Gears. I'm friends with him on Facebook, and he's a high-end watch buyer like John Biggs and like Kevin Michaluk, and he keeps posting the watch bands that he buys, and he buys them from Panerai, and he buys them from Rolex, and they're like $700 or $800 for leather bands, I guess like Hermes, and it's a different world, Leo. There's like a whole world of watch fanatics.
And unfortunately, I bought a bunch of the kind of off-brand watches, like this, you know, the metal ones, and they're
not as good, are they?
They're really bad.
The certified ones haven't come out yet. Those should be coming out towards the holidays.
My daily wear is a $28 eBay Milanese loop, and it's been rock solid for 2 months.
I didn't use the loop.
The leather one, I mean, I've shown this before. This is not a high quality band. If I wore this every day, this would quickly be splitting and cracking.
Right.
But for as a $20 thing that you have in the box when you want to, that one time a year when you need it, that's no good. But the stainless steel one I have is great. The Milanese one is really great.
Yeah, the only thing I want to make sure of is to check if they're sealed, because if you're mixing stainless steel with aluminum, it can create a chemical reaction that kind of destroys the aluminum. Yeah, so it causes like a form of corrosion. So just make sure that most bands are sealed. But if you're getting super cheap stuff off the internet, just make sure.
That's why we're hoping for the MFI certified third party loops. It's just really hard for me to. I go into the Apple store and I see these $150 bands, and they look nice, but they always look nice as defined as, wow, the free band you get with this watch is really nice. It doesn't look like a $150 product.
Right.
So the stainless steel bracelet is maybe the exception. I wasn't behind that until I really started seeing it. I still think it's more expensive than a stainless steel band, the only Apple stainless steel band ought to be. But if this were just a jewelry bracelet, I could see this selling in a store for $300 or $400.
So thank you, Renee, for your picks. Andy Iannacco, what do you think?
Mine is an update to one of my favorite apps. I think I've recommended a couple of years ago. A app called iDraw that is one of my favorite apps for the entire history of my association with Macs has been MacDraw. Like, it was the first really killer app for me because I'm not an illustrator. It just allows you to bang out interesting pictures. And when you need a sign, when you need a graphic, and then it would take these really cool shapes and then turn them into compound curves. So you could really do actual really good artwork with it and with complex fills. And then, of course, Apple started doing Mac Draw.
It's funny that you should say that because Lisa, his long estranged daughter, drew a picture on Mac Paint, and that's what made Steve Jobs love her. I didn't know that. Mm-hmm. And in fact, he printed it out and he saved it in his pocket for years.
According to the movie?
According to the movie.
Yeah, we know everything in the movie is true.
According to the movie. At the end, he goes, you know that drawing you did on the first Macintosh? I still have it.
Made it into a bracelet for you.
Yes.
I thought, you know that drawing you first did me on the Macintosh? I saved it for 20 years so that now I could tear it up and throw it.
It's crap, Lisa. Crap. What do you got for us? I'm sorry. You were talking about it. iDraw.
So iDraw is that replacement because it's Adobe Illustrator and these other really high-end vector graphics programs. They're great if you know how to use them and if you have a graphical eye. If you just want to create a sign or you need to create a quick illustration for a presentation you're doing or a graphic for the web, it's way, way overkill. iDraw is exactly the tool that you need, and they keep adding more and more features to it. They've just upgraded it to version 3, and it has been acquired by Autodesk, and they renamed it Autodesk Graphic. And not only does it come with a new name, they've also upgraded it for the new version of macOS. It now supports a pressure-sensitive drawing, so variable width lines and curves. It now supports force touch on the Magic Trackpad. There was just a boatload of extra features. It can now import Illustrator graphics, import Photoshop graphics, and let you edit them. It's a Heinz 57 app where the 90% features are all easy to use, but then there's like a million 10% features that will help you out like one chance out of 10, one chance out of 20 when you're using it. The other really good thing about it, though, is that it's one app for macOS and iOS. So it also you can take these exact same files and through continuities open it on open it on Graphic for the iPad or even Graphic for the iPhone and pick up exactly where you left off. And on iOS, on the iPad, it supports split screen and so you can share the screen between Graphic and other apps. And it's only a $25 app.
You got to think that this is going to be an iPad Pro pick, right?
They haven't mentioned anything about support for the Pencil, but you got to think that, particularly because now it's an Autodesk product, that they're going to be all over this like a cheap suit.
It's really interesting. At Adobe Max, they announced all these Autodesk apps for iOS, and I thought, they're just waiting. Yep. They can't wait.
But yeah, I mean, the number of times I use iDraw,
$25,
and I have a subscription to Photoshop, so I have Photoshop available to me. But whenever I need to create a graphic, it just takes so much of the effort off of your hands to just bang out a shape, turn that into a curve, or freehand a line and turn that into a shape. Almost every presentation I give, particularly when I'm traveling just with my iPad, we'll have some sort of graphic that the night before when I was going through my slides, saying, gee, I really wish there were a graph that looked like this, or I really wish there was an image of that, and then bang into iDraw, then bang right back out again, and there's my graphic. Beautiful stuff.
So I've always stayed away from vector graphics because I don't feel like I can. I have enough talent to do it, but I'm going to $25. Why not? I'm going to try it.
This is for people who can. It's like Mac Draw. It's for people who can draw circles and lines and use a menu to say, please line these all up so that they're all centered. And then here's a circle. Please put text on this circle, and now please change the color of this.
And I have to admit that Illustrator. I mean, I have the Creative Cloud or whatever, but I still haven't liked a single version of Illustrator after 6.0.
This looks great.
It did everything it needed to do for me.
I really need to go to Bezier Boot Camp because I've been trying to use it since Illustrator 1.0. I still can't instinctively figure out how to make the curve go.
You got those handles and you pull on them and then the weird things happen.
Just don't drop the anchor on the tip of the curve. You put the anchors on either side of the curve. That's all you need to understand.
Put the anchors on the either side of the curve.
Then
I had to use CorelDRAW in my first job to make icons. I made all my icons in CorelDRAW. It was not fun.
The key to understanding Beziers is to understand B-splines. So if you see B-spline cage, as soon as you see, just do a search for B-spline cage. As soon as you see a B-spline cage, then you imagine The little arms are not arms. They're part of a cage that they just got rid of one of the lines.
Clear as that mud, Lindsay. Clear as mud.
You just have to look at a B-spline.
It's just B-splines. Anybody knows that.
That's right. Sign up for Pixel Core.
All I'm saying is that I remember how great it was with I could if I still have them, I should show you for the user groups, the Mac user group. I used to do all the monthly posters. And the ability to simply say, I'm going to draw a jagged line by click, 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 and then ask MacDraw, please turn that into a beautiful curve for me. And then it only takes you like a little bit of practice before you can absolutely describe what you want the curve to be, and it will just absolutely make it perfectly for you. And that's always what I've wanted to go back to.
It also has scripting.
It's a B-spline.
It has features. You can also do things like if you're an app developer, you can create a shape in there, and then it will create the Cocoa code for you to generate it within your app. It will generate CSS so that you can reproduce something on the web.
Well, that's what this is great for, because these are scalable. It even does SVG, which is fabulous.
Yeah, I mean,
Kevin Marks is a big SVG advocate for the web. I'm going to buy it. $25. Done.
Yep.
Thank you, Andy. And now the moment you've all been waiting for. Alex Lindsay's pick of the week. It's a highlight to me.
I'm not going expensive on this.
You're
one.
Not?
Nope. So everybody asks, and I want to make sure I hadn't picked it before, but everyone asked me what I put on my watch because I have this.
You got this rubber thing on your watch.
I love this thing. So this is Spigen, S-P-I-G-N.
Spigen. Yeah, they make great stuff.
So anyway, this is their what they call their rugged armor.
It looks very rugged. You don't have a camera for him, do you?
No.
I can do mine. I can do it over here.
But so it's just it's just a piece of rubber that goes on it. You'll get to see. And it comes with a watch face cover, and I just, especially because I got the sport, so I didn't want to get scratched up, and I didn't want to, have
it
a bunch of stuff.
It is a little scratched already.
Well, that's a piece of plastic over top of it.
So, oh, nice.
So it's So anyway, so it's a piece of plastic over top of the glass, which is not as sharp as the. I mean, it's not.
But it still works.
It's hard. It totally works. It totally works fine. Yeah. Anyway, so I'm. I've been very happy with it. For me, actually, the watch felt too small. I had a much bigger watch before. So when I put the watch on, it needed a little bit more meat. But I'm pretty rough. I carry around a lot of Pelican cases. And so I just knew that the watch would get destroyed.
That's a great idea.
And I believe in kind of wrapping the stuff I get like this. Right. You'll see that I can put these cases on if you look at my laptop, if you look at the damage that this would have taken, like I have chunks coming out of my laptop cases. But the
you really do. It's not good.
No. If you look at it,
it's like, all beat to hell.
That would have been a real big dent.
there you go.
See, that would have been a dent. Anyway, so all of, and then my iPhone, I have put something around it. Anyway, so I think it's great. That's Rugged Armor and Spigen. Is that right?
Spigen.
And it's like, $14. It comes with the little thing, and it comes with little. And it comes with two of them so that you can screw the first one up, which you will.
Yeah.
So, anyway, that's my pick. And my tip is, if you want to check in with your watch on United flights, it's not the United app. It's your wallet. You have to send your ticket
to the wallet.
And then you can use the wallet, and then you can look. You're the geekiest person in line because you go and the key. One more tip here.
Yeah,
is
because you don't have to show them your phone. You just show them your watch.
Well, you just have to show them that little QR code. And so what you do though, here's the big tip.
Yeah,
roll it under, go military style, and roll it under like this. See. Then
it's easy.
See, then you have it, and
you wear it upside down on your wrist.
You wear it upside down on your wrist, and then
is that military style?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
So anyway, so. So then you have it like that, and then you just go, dunk, and it's just,
tunk,
and then you're in.
They just think you're a commando.
And I do that a couple times a week.
Nice.
So anyway, it's useful.
I think I'm going to get, I was talking about getting a rubber band for sport purposes. This is actually.
And it's, what's cool about it is, I played with it.
It's $14.
$14. And you can get white and then put it with a black band or, if you already have one, so you can kind of mix and match, which is kind of cool.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
Anyway, that's it.
I'm going to add that to my cart. Have you enjoyed today's show? Thank you. It's all these guys. I'm just the hot air that glues it all together. I'm think of me as a glue gun. Andy Inoko, Chicago Sun-Times. Always a pleasure. Listen, to, if you want more, Andy, Inoko's Almanac on the 5x5 Network. And are you doing any other podcasts? Is that it?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I'm also doing a podcast called Medium on Relay.fm. That's all about Google.
Oh, fun. Medium.
As a matter of fact, you might. This week's episode is going to be especially fun. Well, last week we recorded we decided to screen The Interview with Owen Wilson and
Oh God, is that a horrible movie?
Yeah, and we decided to basically talk about that movie for a good hour and a half. So that's
It's not Medium; it's Material.
I'm sorry.
Learn the name of your show, dude.
sorry. So, I designed the logo. Okay, come on.
Did you do that in graphic? That's nice. Material.
That's an excellent example. I needed to show. Here's what I think the logo should be. It took me all of 5 minutes after failing to do it in Photoshop because.
Very good. Relay.fm. Another guy does a lot of podcasts. This guy over here, Mr. Rene Ritchie, imore.com.
I have to confess, Leo, last night Georgia managed to get Ronda Rousey's mom onto Vector, and we had a terrific interview.
Who's Ronda Rousey?
Ronda Rousey is the UFC female champion.
Oh, I know who she
is. Widely considered to be one of the best mixed martial artists in history. And her mom was one of the first female judo champions. She's got a doctorate in education. And she runs a game company designed to help kids learn math, which was phenomenal.
Yeah.
Amazing. Yeah.
Which of your many shows is that one?
It's going to be on Vector. It's going to be up later today on Vector.
So go to imore.com and then click the hamburger menu and you can see all the podcasts. There's a lot of them. And Debug is great, and there's so many good ones. Thank you, Renee, for being here. imore.com. Alex Lindsay visiting us from parts unknown.
I'm off to Rwanda next week, but I should be somewhere with connectivity.
Good.
And then
good.
Tentatively somewhere in Southeast Asia after that. So,
if you want to know what he's up to, the easiest way to find out, especially if he's got a Final Cut course or something going on, is follow him on Twitter. AlexLindsay Lindsay.
We start doing the big move this week.
The big move.
We're moving the gear to San Rafael.
Somebody asked, if Leo leaves the Brick House, what's happening to Alex? He left first. Part of the reason we have to move is because that space is now empty. We got about a third of the space that was occupied by the Pixel Core.
Right, yeah. We just needed... It was kind of getting absurd. If you look at all the road cases and stuff, we were running out of space.
And you have spaces everywhere too.
I mean, we have all these different spaces all over Petaluma, and we didn't have enough space for the gear anymore. And we couldn't here. We would kind of shut down traffic as we moved everything out of the Brick House for an event. So now we can drive trucks into the space.
Nice.
That's the key.
And when will that be completed?
January 1. I mean, I don't know. No.
We'll know what you mean.
We'll hopefully get most of it out by the
end
of the
month. When I look at the basement, I think, what am I going to do?
I know.
I
look at the basement, and I'm just like, oh, my gosh. So
one of the reasons people should move every 5 years is for that, just to get rid of stuff. Yeah. Otherwise, you just accumulate.
Yeah.
All right, Alex, Renee, Andy, thank you so much for being here. Thanks to Jason Howell, our producer. And thanks to you for joining us. If you can watch live, it's always fun. 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1800 UTC on twit.tv/live. You can also get on-demand versions of the show audio or video at twit.tv/MBW or wherever finer podcasts are aggregated, including Marco's Fine Overcast app. And if you want to be in the studio, email us. We'd love to have you. Tickets at twit.tv. I'm Leo Laporte. Thanks for joining us. But now you got to get back to work because break time is over. Bye-bye.